centered in front, got a shot, it rolls in front of the net, they score! TJ Brody is going to end the drought. He gets his first goal as a Maple Leaf. Right wing side, Marner, back to Matthews, the backhand, they score! Zach Hyman is the garbage man. He picks it up at the side of the goal and hammers it home. The Montreal Canadiens are thwarted, and a special night for Jack Campbell. 10-0-0, the best start in the history of the Toronto Maple Leafs for a goaltender to start the season.
A stand and applause, Jack Campbell. But before we break down the Leafs game, get into the Blue Jays and start to tee up the Masters, what did you just hold up?
It's a big Leaf win. I poured myself a cup of kefir today. A little cheap kefir. Yeah, that's what I do after wins. You don't recognize that by now. I always pour myself a small glass of the kefir.
The kefir. So we're on FaceTime. That's how we're seeing each other and communicating each day on the show. So when you hold something up, now you've just taken a drink of something else with
green
something
tea
in your left hand. So you got green tea in the left and sheep kefir in the right.
Yep. And a little beet juice today.
Are you honestly drinking the kefir while we're doing this segment? Like,
yeah,
I don't know how you're not gagging. I don't know how you're bringing yourself close to vomit. Hugh and I still haven't recovered from that experience like 6 months ago.
Yeah, I don't do it all the time. I've been doing it a lot lately with the Leafs, but yeah, once in a while, it's like,
On a second. You have a glass of kefir the morning after a win?
Oh yeah.
You gotta
have something ready for the Leafs win. It's kind of like the champagne, you have the glass in the air, the pinky kind of off it, and I enjoy a glass of kefir.
Like, I know you guys are superstitious when you play. Are you actually copping to a superstition right now? Are you just kefir every morning?
I don't have it every morning. It's hard to get this one brand I have. So I don't get a chance. It's not in the grocery store every time. When it's there, I get it. I don't have it every week, but yeah, after a win, I always do a little something in the morning.
Does it smell like the foot of a person who's just run a marathon?
It's not that bad. You guys, I don't know. Yeah, if you can get by the smell and the initial shock of the taste, it's not too bad. Oh, yeah. You wash it down with something. That's it.
Yeah.
It's not, you guys got the wrong brand. You got some flavored kefir I never heard about
before. It wasn't flavored, dude. It was straight up plain kefir, and it was from a sheep, and there was an effort made to go and buy it because we went to some regular grocery stores and it was all cow stuff. Yeah. We did the sheep. We lived up to the bargain. We drank the champagne of sheep kefirs. Canada Dry is the champagne of ginger ales. Whatever we drank was the champagne of sheep kefirs. All right, Leafs last night. Sean McKenzie talking to Jack Campbell after the game last night as Jack Campbell wins his 10th consecutive game this season. He's 10-0-0.
We must be playing well. I mean, win 10 in a row just to get one win is a big deal because it's a tough league and you need everybody to win, and that's what we've been getting. So it's super special and an honor and something I'll be able to look back on sometime. But right now it's just back to work and trying to get better.
This guy, I've described Jack Campbell, he's the most Canadian-American we've ever met. I don't think that he's low-key, Ziggy, but it's clear to me when you listen to guys, they play hard in front of Jack Campbell. They want Jack Campbell to be successful. And I don't know how you quantify that. I don't know what effect that ends up having game in and game out. But if they're asked about Jack Campbell, they don't have to say much. Like the opposite of saying, I love the guy. He's one of the best human beings I've ever met. He's wonderful, this, that, the other thing. The opposite isn't saying he's the worst human being, etc. It's just not to say much. If he didn't engender any kind of emotion in these guys absolutely love Jack Campbell. And these little post-game head taps and everything after he wins a hockey game, Mitch Marner giving him a little bit of a pep talk, and he was asked about that. Like, these have become routine. These have become the norm. And I'm one of the last holdouts to sit here and say that the net absolutely is Jack Campbell's, and I'm still not willing to go there just yet. But Freddie's going to come back, and it ain't automatically his. Not at this point.
Well, the way you have to look at it is every one of these wins, every big stop, I'm with you. It's Freddie's net when he's healthy, but I'll say this about it. That leash is getting shorter and shorter. Every win, every big stop. The guy doesn't let in more than three goals. He's only let in three goals a couple times this year. And he's got the right personality. Everyone's talking about, all these little things he's doing with Marner after the game, and he's winking at guys. As a backup goaltender, you have to have the right personality. I'm going to stay out for 3,000 shots after practice. If you hit me in the head with a puck, I'm not upset. I'm the happy-go-lucky guy in the room. On the bench, I'm talking it up with guys on where to beat the other goaltender. That's the kind of guy you want as your backup. You don't want the quiet, not say anything, captain serious. You don't want that guy as your backup. You need someone to keep things light in the room. And Campbell does that, but it's spilling over into the game now in a positive way. That's what, when you hear everyone talking, he's a good guy, everyone wants to be around him. Those are the kind of things the backups do. You know, I know they can't do it, but organize the dinners. You know, if the guys are going out, you go with the guys after games. You know, you're just that guy that you're a glue guy in the room, essentially. And Campbell's fit that role really well. And I don't know if we have the rest of the audio from him post game, but that's kind of what I wanted to really talk about. I don't know if you caught it. He was almost breaking down in tears after the game.
Well, here's his conversation. This is about a minute long. It's a worthwhile clip to listen to. Jack Campbell with Sean McKenzie after the game.
After the win, guys just seemed to line up to give their congratulations to you. A long chat with Austin Matthews and a lot of fun here with Mitch Marner. I actually got the chance to talk to Matthews before the game about you, and he says he just loves having you as a teammate and he just loves having you around. When you hear guys talk so highly of you, whether it be Marner, Matthews, anyone, just what does that mean to you?
It's pretty awesome. You know, lots of words right now. It's been a long journey, and just to have their support, every single guy, it's crazy. It's a dream come true, something I worked very hard for. And, you know, there's not a day I don't thank the Lord for putting me here in Toronto with these amazing guys. And, you know, I don't want to forget my LA teammates and coaches there, because they got the ball rolling for me in the NHL, and without them I wouldn't be here. But since I've been here, the team and the organization's been just amazing, and you know, I still get a lot better. I can still keep getting a lot better, so that's all I'm focused on, and we're just trying to have as much fun and keep winning.
Jack, thanks so much for the time and congratulations.
Thank you very much, Sean. Take care.
Like, I mean, this guy's, if he's not a cult hero yet, imagine what it'd be like if there were fans in the stands, Ziggy.
Oh, it'd be crazy.
Guy's a cult hero.
Yeah, so he almost couldn't get his words out when Sean asked him the first question, right? So that's just a guy that's worked hard his whole career to get to this point. You're going to say, he's getting an opportunity because Freddie's injured. No, he earned this chance. He earned the chance to be a backup. He's had a fight in three different leagues to get to this point. Everyone just thinks, he was in LA, didn't really get his chance. Finally, he's in Toronto right now. Freddie goes down, and this is what he's supposed to do. No, this is an 11th overall pick, first rounder, a lot of pressure on him, goes to Dallas, spends 2.5 years in the minors, finally gets a chance with them. They don't like him. He's back in the ECHL in Idaho, then back up with Texas Stars, the minor league affiliate in Dallas. and then finally gets moved to LA, right? This isn't just a guy that's been waiting for his chance. He's had to go down to the double A level and work himself back up. So when you hear him after that, that's just a lot of years of pressure and expectation he's put on himself. And it's finally, he's finally starting to see the fruits of all the hard work and, you know, the years, the blood, the sweat, everything he put into his game is finally coming. And that's what you see. And the fact that guys on your team talk about you that way. Yeah, he couldn't hold it together. But that's just the guy that's battled his whole career. And you can say, well, he hasn't played many games, right? 74 games. But every player doesn't have the same career path, right? You just because you're a top 10 or top 15 NHL pick, you don't just magically come into the NHL. Some guys have to battle 10 years to get there. And it's taken him that long. And the workload for a goaltender is something different than I think any other person on a team, any other player deals with, in the fact that, can you do it every night? We talk about Freddie and how his leash is getting shorter and shorter. Freddie's done the hard. He's lifted the heavy stuff with this team, right? He's been the guy that's carried the water. He's still the guy in net. It's still his. But who's to say Campbell can't get there? Is this his chance? We only know from the more games he's going to play. We talked about that 10, 11, 12 games. Then let's talk then. Well, we're almost there, and Campbell's showing he can be a number one. There's no other way to do it than to see the goaltender actually go through it. Freddie's done it for a lot of years in Toronto. Like I said, the Vasilevskis, Hellebuck, Price, who didn't play. But those guys are the best in the league, because they've logged the most amount of games, wins. They've really, for workload, it matters in net.
Yeah, and I think if Jack Campbell continues to play this way, he will continue to just gain the trust, not just of his teammates, but of the fan base. Like, he's playing well until he's not playing well. And the issue with backups is that it's a matter of consistency, and you have to do it week over week, month over month, and ultimately year over year. Jack Campbell can do the week over week, month over month thing this season. The year over year thing, that remains to be determined. But if he is their best option heading into the playoffs, then he should be the guy. I'm not ready to declare that, but if he is their best option, he should get that opportunity. I don't think that there's any question about it.
The only thing I'll say is that if he has an off night where he lets in three goals and two of them are bad, and maybe he lets in a four or five, I don't think we'll evaluate him in a fair way. I really think it'll go south in a hurry. Like, one bad game, and I think we're all going to be like,
"Well, but Z,
he's not the guy."
It depends, though. If Freddie is still hurt and not available, I'm thinking about what you're saying, so it's spilling out of my mouth here on the air. If Freddie's still hurt and not available, I think there's no conversation. Right? Jack Campbell is the guy. Michael Hutchinson's the backup. If Freddie is sitting there on the end of the bench waiting in the wings, then I think what you say comes into play. Well, there's Freddie. But Jack coughed it up. I do believe, though, that the longer this goes, him playing really good hockey, the leash gets a little bit longer and longer and longer. Like, you're allowed to burp one up every now and then. It's not pleasant. You might hear some things on the radio if you happen to tune in that you'd rather not hear. But the leash gets longer. I mean, he's earning trust with every performance. And we know in this city, you got to look at the baseball team. Jose Bautista became a star at 29, 30 years old. Josh Donaldson acquired from Oakland, where he had become a star at about 27 or 28. Edwin Encarnacion took him until he was into his late 20s. As a member of the Blue Jays, on his second organization to figure it out. Maybe Jack Campbell on his third organization has figured it out. I'm not willing to declare that yet. Got to see more of it. But maybe, just maybe, he has. And if he has, the Leafs will stand to benefit. We get our first big trade leading up to the deadline. The Islanders get Kyle Palmieri and Travis Zajac from the New Jersey Devils. The Devils are going to pick up half of the salaries for both players. They get a couple of kids, plus a first rounder this summer, and a conditional fourth round pick next year that becomes a third round pick if the Islanders make the Stanley Cup final. So Palmieri moves. That was a guy on the Maple Leafs radar. And on the day of the trade, Ziggy, we find out that William Nylander is not going to play for the Leafs last night because he's had potential exposure to a positive COVID test. And the Maple Leafs won last night, so I'm not taking anything away, but look at the lines. We're talking about depth, right? We've been hammering the depth storyline for weeks and weeks and weeks. You got 34 with 16 and 11 flanking him. John Tavares' wingers last night are Alex Galchenyuk and Ilya Mikheyev when the puck drops. 88's out. Oof. Like, I mean, they won a hockey game last night. They may need to win another one or two coming up here without Nylander. Let's hope there's a negative test and Williams back on the ice and everything's fine. But that is not the kind of forward lineup I want to run into the playoffs with. I don't think he can win every second night for 2.5 months with that.
I thought Tavares had a number of good looks, even one of his better games. I liked him. I like him with guys with some speed and that play the game a little bit hard-nosed. And I know Galchenyuk and Mikheyev aren't going to run guys through the boards, but Galchenyuk plays a pretty physical game for a skilled guy. I just think when you get two energy guys like that with Tavares, that's what he needs. He needs someone to get him the puck, someone with some hockey sense, some finish. And I know Mikheyev's not the finish player on that line, but Galchenyuk can finish. He scored 30 goals. And I like the three of those guys together. With Nylander out, I agree with you in the fact that if one of the big four aren't there, it's a glaring hole. I think Nylander, out of the four of them, I'm okay with. Like, if Tavares was out of the lineup, I'd be concerned, second line center. If Matthews was out, you know,
it'd be very
concerned. Rocket candidate, I'd be concerned. Marner, I think he's the most underrated and he's the engine of this team. If he's out, I think you'd really notice it. And it's not a knock against Nylander. It's just out of the four, I'm okay with that. And I'm okay with the game they played last night. I thought they came out strong. I love when Matthews has a first shift like that. And I thought last night they were pretty good as a whole. So I didn't notice it too much, but I know what you're saying. When one of the big four is out and the playoffs start rolling around, you start to see how bad. Like, I think when Matthews was out, it's kind of like, uh-oh, that's when the Leafs are like, go and get someone else. And right now, Nylander's out. Yeah, you'd like some backup. You'd like another top nine guy in there. And does this lead to the trade now, right? What if Nylander's out for 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks? What do you do? Do you go out and get someone now for sure? Like, is this the time to do it?
Well, and if he's coming from an American team, he's got to sit for a
you're
week.
You're not seeing him for a week anyways. Yeah. When you look at the top three lines, you'd like to upgrade. You always want to get better. You want to get that third line better. Are you comfortable with Spezza and Thornton on the third line? I think that's the question you have to answer yourself. Not like, oh, is Galchenyuk the guy for the second line Tavares? I want someone to play with when Nylander comes back. I want someone to play with Nylander and Tavares, but I'm more concerned about having a threat on the third line. There's a lot of nights they're going to come playoff time. They're going to shut Tavares' line down some days. They're going to shut Matthews' line down. It's that third line. We've seen the teams that win. We see the teams that are always in contention, the contenders, Tampa, Vegas, the Bruins. They have three lines. Hurricanes have three lines that can score. The Islanders are one of those teams. All these top teams, they have three lines that can hurt you. And it's still that third line. You want it to get more dangerous. And by picking anybody up, your third line will get more dangerous. Like, if they pick up someone for Tavares and Nylander, the third line is going to get better. And that's really the concern. But yeah, when you see Nylander out of the lineup, you're just like, where's our offense going to come from? Like, who are you expecting to score? Like, you're not expecting Mikheyev to score. And I think as a second line player, you have to be a threat to score every time you're on the ice. And if you don't do that, you better play harder than anybody on the ice, bring more energy, and do a number of other things, whether it's kill, front of the net on the power play, you know, bench, room guy. You have to do something else. Get under the skin. You got to be tough to play against if you're not a threat to score. And Mikheyev checks a lot of those boxes, except is he your threat to score every time he's on the ice? I don't think he's in that conversation yet.
No, and you talked about the third line, and would I be comfortable with Spezza and Thornton on the third line? I think in a one or two game spurt, sure. Like last night, this weekend, if that's what it takes, all right. But are you going to ask Joe Thornton and Jason Spezza to go out there and play 13 to 15 minutes minimum every other night against playoff caliber teams, third lines every other night for 2.5 months at the toughest time of the season? Like, it's just not realistic. And we're sitting here fully aware that Kyle Dubas is working the phones and trying to get something done. And he's got until Monday afternoon to do it. So
yeah,
we're like everybody else. We're sitting on pins and needles, just waiting. Palmieri and Zajac are now with the Islanders. The salary retention by the Devils, Palmieri is a hell of a player.
Mm-hmm.
The salary retention, I think, contributes to the fact that they get a first-round pick. What does that mean for Taylor Hall? The Buffalo Sabres apparently want a first-round pick for him. Rickard Rakell down there in Anaheim is an option. The guys in Columbus, whether it's Foligno, Boone, Jenner, maybe the price points just aren't where Kyle Dubas wants them right now. And as we always say, with an impending trade deadline, doesn't matter what league it is, those are the pressure points. That's when not just the acquiring team, but the team that's trading the current asset for the future has to make a decision. We're either going to do this now or we're not going to do this. So we'll see. We'll see how long this drags out before the Leafs are able to jump in and get something done, because I think we both feel something will happen.
Well, the nice part about not having to do it until now is the fact that they've been winning. Like, if they would have gone through a tough stretch right now and they were in jeopardy of not making the playoffs, I think now after this win yesterday, they literally will not. Like, that pretty much sealed the deal for playoffs. I don't know what the magic number is, but if you look at 20 points with 20 games or 19 games to go, that's pretty much over mathematically. Like, I don't think there's little chance that a team like Calgary or Vancouver is going to catch them at this point.
Well, look at this. They played the same number of games as Calgary. So Calgary and Vancouver have 35 points each. They are 5-6, tied for fifth. Right, Vancouver's got the COVID situation, so they're falling behind in terms of number of games played, so I'll focus on Calgary. The Calgary Flames have played 40 games, Ziggy, which means they have 16 left, which means they can get no more than 32 points. Right? They go 16 and which isn't happening. They go 16-0, they get 32 points. They are 22 points behind the Maple Leafs right now. Leafs are in the playoffs.
You're fighting for first, but when you're looking at making a trade for someone and they're going to spend a week in quarantine and you're not going to have access to them, it's a lot better than if you're fighting for your playoff life and things are tight and you make a trade and you lose someone. And then all of a sudden you're sitting there for a week and you have a player that's going to miss 3 or 4 games. Then they're not going to be in shape. It's going to take them 3 or 4 games to get in it before you know it. Right. They only have, you know, a dozen games to get ready for the playoffs. I think it's a tough situation. But now that you're up, you can kind of, there's a little bit of wiggle room there, right? Where you can kind of wait, see what you got, let a player, you know, if they make a trade for someone, he can sit in quarantine. There's not as much pressure on that trade to pan out. Like, you don't need immediate help, right?
Yeah.
You have some space.
And it's a good thing. Like, if Kyle Dubas made a trade 10 minutes from now, and the guy had to come here and sit, he'd miss 4 games. The Leafs have the Senators at home Saturday night. They're in Montreal Monday. They're home to Calgary on Tuesday. and they are home to Winnipeg next Thursday. Like the earliest, if he made a trade today and the guy got here and into quarantine today, the earliest would be the Saturday, April 17th game in Vancouver. We'll get Gord Stellick to jump in on the conversation, talk about Jack Campbell, talk about the trade deadline after the Islanders make a big, big move to sort of break the dam heading into Monday. The Blue Jays fall to Texas. The Raptors have a big game tonight against the Chicago Bulls. We're all over that. Adam Stanley will join us at about 7:10. Hugh Burrell will jump into studio. We'll make our Masters picks. The guys get off the tee at 8 o'clock this morning. It's Masters weekend, baby. Cue that music. Gord Stellick next. Tonight, Ziggy. Can you feel it? It'd be so much different if it was down at Rogers Center, right?
I want to go down and cover the game. Get
yes.
My pass. Go.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
You know what? I didn't get end up getting my Raptors pass from 2 years ago because I just never. It's a lot of the same crew that worked the games for the Leafs. Where like you see the
yes,
same.
Absolutely.
A lot of the same friends. So. Usually, the Raptors games that I did go to, I would just kind of walk in and didn't get.
Oh, we had big. We
say
had,
this we over had, the air, but I used to just walk up and go in. But we do have passes for the Leafs and the Raptors, right?
Right, but we also had big plans last year to go down
yeah,
to
Jays games,
batting
well,
practice, and all that. And then, of course,
oh man,
COVID, right? So
yeah, it. I mean, that would have been honestly, I. And a lot of my friends, and I've had this conversation, it's what would you prefer? Like, what would you rather go to for a shoot around before a Raptors game in the morning, a pregame skate for the Leafs, or batting practice for Jays? And I'm like, Jays. And neither of the other two come close. I haven't gone to a Raptors kind of, you know, pregame shoot around or whatever you want to call it in the morning, but I have done the other two, obviously, and the batting practice is BP is like the best thing to go to.
Well, now,
I don't care. Nothing comes close to that.
Now you just want to jump in and take part because you think you can hit 104 miles an hour, right? So you want to show Vladdy. You want to show Vladdy what you got.
Yeah, sure.
This guy, I'm calling this guy our next guest, the Tony Finau of our guests. Tony Finau is a guy who can totally blow an ankle. Pop it right back in and go right back out and have a great weekend of golf. Gord Stellick's a guy who can stay up late, watch a hockey game, and then he's up bright and early the next day, and he's chipper and ready to go. Here he is. Hello, Gord.
And I just banged my shoulder in the wall to my dislocated shoulder, put it back in before it came on. How about that?
You know what?
True warrior.
Yeah, true warrior. And I might actually believe that. I am capable of falling for things like that. Listen, you know, we got to get into the trade deadline and the big moves the Islanders made, et cetera. But let's start with Jack Campbell. I am hesitant to just say the net is his, Gord, but I'm with Ziggy on this. Every time this guy goes out and plays, his leash gets a little bit longer, and Freddie's, whenever Freddie gets back, gets a little bit shorter.
Yeah, no question. And again, it's nothing personal. Like Ziggy knows, boy, if you take things personally in professional sports or in media, actually, you're in a lot of trouble. And, you know, flat out, Freddie Anderson has been great for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Freddie Anderson has not been great in the playoffs. Neither has the team he's played for. But he hasn't played well for a number of reasons this year, including injury related. But let's look at the upside instead of the negative. You got a guy that came over. What a great reclamation project of sorts. I mean, shows a great example of those quieter trade deadline deals. And Jack Campbell flat out has found what made him the 11th overall pick, the first goalie selected in his draft year. And last night was the pièce de résistance. I mean, the second period, outshot 17-4. So to get that record of 10 consecutive wins, I mean, he was the difference. He had to go out and get it. Jack Campbell was the reason he got that 10th consecutive win. So he is, if Freddie comes back, obviously in a perfect world, you'd love to have two guys going great. But right now, yeah, certainly Jack Campbell is going to be the guy you're going to take in and run with.
Me and Scotty were talking about how Anderson's leash is getting shorter and shorter. Do you kind of see that as the situation? Like, obviously, when Freddie's healthy, he's going to have an opportunity to come back in the net. But it's almost like if he has a bad one once he's back, the way Campbell's playing right now, you go back to Campbell quicker than you would have if, you know, we didn't see this 10-0 performance from Campbell.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ziggy. Now the one thing, I mean, again, we have no idea. I thought the one, you know, point was Sheldon Keefe, when asked by Chris Johnston about, is there any chance Freddie's out for the rest of the season? He quickly said, no. So, I mean, that's good that at least there's a concept that it's not that kind of injury that will, you know, carry through that long. But you've built up, you've banked some points, which gives you some leeway, you know, probably to try some things out. And, I'd like to see them try some defensemen out just because you're going to need some depth. I mean, this is not a team talking about winning a playoff round for a team that hasn't won a playoff round in like almost 20 years. They're talking about, you know, winning two at least as a minimum and really competing for the Stanley Cup. So, you know, the year the Washington Capitals won the Stanley Cup, Philip Grubauer played a couple of games. He started. And so, you know, you need depth in every position, and that includes goal, very likely, in the playoffs. So having two guys going great would be phenomenal. Right now, only one guy's had a solid year and a healthy year, and that's Jack Campbell. If Freddie can get back up to snuff, that would be great to have a 1A and a 1B.
With Gord Stellick on leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So the first big trade deadline piece falls. Kyle Palmieri moves on from the New Jersey Devils to the Islanders. Travis Zajac, I mean, that's Lou throwing one of his old guys a bone. You know, the veteran centerman, hey, come maybe win a cup with us toward the end of your career, because that's a guy that Lou would have drafted way back in the day with the New Jersey Devils. But those two are on their way to the island. A first-round pick, conditional fourth, couple of kids, and the Devils are retaining 50% of the two players' salaries to make it work better for the Islanders. So that's a bit of a haul. It perhaps informs what the Taylor Halls of the world could go for between now and Monday, presuming that they're traded. The Leafs have to do something here, Gord. You know, the first thing we think about when we hear somebody either has COVID or has had exposure to somebody who has tested positive, which seems to be the William Nylander situation. We're knocking on wood, hoping that Willie's healthy, hoping for all the best, hoping that he tests negative, et cetera. That's what we think about first. The second thing we think about is, oh my gosh, like if one of the top four is taken out of this Leafs lineup, that second line suddenly looks really, really thin. And that third line as a result looks even thinner. I love Thornton. I love Spezza. I don't love them as third line wingers every second night for 15 minutes a night for 2.5 months starting in mid-May.
Yeah, you know, the injury illness concept, Brendan Gallagher, what a loss for the Montreal Canadiens. Blake Wheeler now concussion issues with Winnipeg. I mean, two of the Leaf arch rivals. And I was talking about, you know, these games coming up again because they bank points. To your point, Scott, is let's get Thornton and Simmons in the flow and kind of find roles for them. Sheldon Keefe at the start put them in great places. Joe Thornton will not be back on the first line playing the wing again, you know, but I think it was great Sheldon Keefe put him there and gave Wayne Simmons times with a prominent line. He's given them power play time. And again, if you're going to get 16 wins, you need, like Gary Volk did all those years ago, you need the lesser light to come up and make a difference in one or two wins. I mean, that's how you collectively get there. So I think there's an element about finding appropriate roles and lesser roles for those guys, but also, well, Spezza's actually played really well. I mean, he's of the three, he's been consistent. But the other two haven't played as well as they did before they got injured. But just, you know, get them in some kind of groove so they're another little spice you have in the playoff mix.
What were your thoughts on the second line yesterday without Nylander on Tavares' side? So Mikheyev, Tavares, and Galchenyuk. What are your thoughts on them? And just as a whole, What do you see out of this Leafs team when Nylander's not in?
You mean the same guy everybody was running out of town 3 weeks ago, that Nylander?
Yeah.
And will be running out of town again three weeks from now? Is that that Nylander?
Yes. Actually, you know, we know about his streakiness, but he'd been one of the real consistent players of late. I thought William Nylander really been on top of his game. So there's no question when he's out, you miss him. I like Mikheyev getting the opportunity. I mean, he's just got to be able or learn to finish a bit more and get those totals up because he's got the speed. He's unafraid. He's fearless to cut to the net and all those kinds of things. So, you know, I got to tell you, Ziggy, it was the real big guns that came up last night. Like Zach Hyman belongs on that first line. And that's going to be, you know, that's going to be your A line and the B line. You want to be, you know, not that far off. So it was a funny game the A line dominated last night. And it was a funny game that once, and again, we go back to it, God, the power play, like they had the two-man advantage. And then it wasn't even like they didn't score. It just was, they didn't get anything going at all. And it seemed to take the air out of the balloon a little bit that after that, the game wasn't quite as exciting for a while, and the Montreal Canadiens had a bit of an edge in the second period. We mentioned those shots on goal, 17-4 in their favor, and then I thought the Leafs got back to that, you know, that train they've had rolling when times are good in the third period. But yeah, there's no question that William Nylander or any of the guys you mentioned, if they're out of it for the first two lines, that's a big hole to try to fill.
You a golf guy? Who's going to win the Masters if you are?
I was there 3 years ago, I'm very fortunate. It was a last minute thing, so I phenomenally loved that experience. And that was when Patrick Reed won it, who isn't exactly everybody's favorite. I think the coolest thing is when you're at a hole, and if you're a past Masters winner, Freddie Couples, whatever, Sandy Lyle, like you get a standing ovation. Like, you only play two rounds because you don't make the cut, but you get to come back all the time in 18 holes. You get, like, three standing ovations on those holes, and that's just a phenomenal thing about being able to bring back the great players in a kind of a setting like that to get super appreciated. So I've got to pick something as far as the Masters pool goes today. DeChambeau was always, exciting as far as the long ball guy. And that it was fun talking to Wayne Gretzky. It's not like I call him up, talk to him all the time, but having him on air just after his son-in-law won the Masters back in November. So I'll go with the long ball hitter that way. But, hey, Corey Connors, we got something in the game, kind of like we had with Mike Weir years ago from Canada.
It'd be amazing if Corey's in the picture on the weekend, especially on Sunday. And we'll be keeping our eyes on it. You know you're on mornings after games, Gord. We love the chat. We appreciate your time. And we'll bug you. You can be sure of it next week.
Well, it sounds good. It's playoff weather normally, so looking forward to the push to the playoffs 2021 style.
Gord Stellick, who alongside Nick Hullberga co-hosts Leafs Nation pre and post here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Adam Stanley at 7:10. We'll make our Masters picks. Kevin Barker for the half hour at 7:30. Throw those Blue Jays right-handed hitters a first pitch breaking ball off the plate. Chances are it'll be 0-1. Throw Rowdy Tellez a dead red fastball. Chances are he'll swing through it. The bats have not come to life just yet for the Blue Jays. They fall in Texas, have the home opener down in Dunedin tonight, and the Raps with a big game against the Bulls as they continue the tortoise race toward the playoffs. More on that coming up. Now I'm back in middle school. The plaid shirts, the Doc Martens. Early 90s. But we're paying a little tribute to Kurt Cobain and Nirvana today. He passed away on the 5th of April, 1994, but he was found today, the 8th of April, 1994, 27 years ago today. Absolute legend.
Yeah, one of my favorites.
George Springer, Zig. George Springer now has a quad problem, and it was a big enough problem that he had to go for an MRI, and we're still awaiting results on that. So George Springer has not made his Blue Jays debut yet because of an oblique situation. He's taking batting practice through the weekend at Yankee Stadium, took some BP in Texas on Monday. And one of the things that guys do if they're not playing in minor league games, and there's no opportunity to do that just yet because the minor league seasons have not started, one of the things that they will do when they're taking batting practice is that they will simulate running the bases. And Springer did that in Texas the other day and felt some tightness in his quad. So the tightness has moved from the oblique to the quad, and we don't know the extent of the injury yet. That's pending the MRI results being revealed. But what we do know is he's not going to be in the lineup for the Blue Jays in their home opener down in Dunedin against the LA Angels tonight. And we're just going to have to wait for the $150 million man a little bit longer. It sucks because the Jays' bats are scuffling here early in the season.
Well, that's been the issue, right? It's been a guy hot here, a guy hot there. The top of the lineup's cold one day. The next day, it's decent. Then further down, it's been cold. Yeah, it, right now, the hitting situation with the Jays is why they're at 3-3. This is a team that should be 4-2, if not 5-1 through the first six games. They've played well enough to have a winning record, but you know, you go back home 3-3. I think it's a decent start to the season when you're on the road like that. The Springer injury, I'm kind of concerned now that it's gone to a quad. I don't think it's an oblique injury that just, I don't think they're connected.
You don't think the tightness just moved a little south?
No.
You're not in for that medical opinion?
No, but a lot of times that can happen. No, I know you're joking around, but that you are right. That can happen. I'm just going to say for an oblique injury going into the quad, that's just a guy that hasn't ran the bases and then all of a sudden is ramping up his, you know, getting ready for game action and he gets injured. I mean, I think it's just one of those freak things where he strained a quad. I don't know what he was doing. You know, sometimes you focus so much on your injury that something else goes on you. I've had that happen a couple times where I'm so focused on getting a shoulder better or a wrist better that you don't work on the rest of your game. You know, maybe you don't stretch the same. Maybe you don't warm up the same. And then all of a sudden you go and do something like trying to simulate a game where you're running the bases and he tweaks a quad. It happens. I'm concerned at this point because if a quad or a hamstring lingers, you know, then we're talking about another week or two. So hopefully that's not the case. He's back sooner than later. And I'm excited to see how he fits in the chemistry and where he's sitting in the lineup. I can't wait to watch. I'm sure I'm not alone in that, but get over these injuries. You know, you want him 100%. You don't want things to linger on.
Yeah, and this can be a tough homestand. The Angels they can bop offensively. Pretty good team. They got this generation's version of Mickey Mantle, Mike Trout. We know that. Four games against the Angels starting tonight and right through the weekend. And then the Yankees are coming in for three starting on Monday. All on Sportsnet, all on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Kevin Barker for the full half hour at 7:30. Born and Stewie at 8:30. Colby Armstrong ahead on the program. Adam Stanley about 10 minutes from now. We'll get Hugh in as well. We'll make our Masters picks for you. The Raps with a big game tonight, even if it doesn't really feel like it. We'll touch on that. And the Leafs with a big win over the Canadiens, shorthanded. Ziggy, we got to come up with like a bunch of chores, get Hugh running around town all day so that he can't plop his butt on
fat
the couch.
On the couch.
Get that orange Dorito powder just resting in your chest hair as you plow through three bags of chips and watch golf all day long.
The perfect afternoon. You're describing.
And it's only Thursday.
I know.
There's also tomorrow.
Saturday.
There's also Saturday. There's also
what a
Sunday.
Time to be alive.
What a time to be. Yes. The Blue Jays home opener tonight. the Leafs coming off a victory, playing Ottawa on Saturday, and you got the Raptors and the Bulls in a tortoise race for 10th place in the Eastern Conference. It's all happening. It's all happening all at once. Everybody's happy for Jack Campbell. 10-0-0 this season. First 10 games are victories for him as the backup goaltender and perhaps the number one goaltender for the Maple Leafs. I don't know how you view it, Hugh, and we'll jump into the conversation this way. As a guy who is a supporter of the Montreal Canadiens, and you say, well, why cry me a river on the William Nylander front? It's not like the Habs were playing with 100% of their roster last night. But what stands out for me, and my sense is Ziggy feels the same way, is that this is a Leafs lineup that when you take out one of the top four players, and Nylander didn't play last night, that depth disappears pretty quickly. Kyle Dubas is aware of it. We got to expect something between now and Monday afternoon, trade deadline.
First of all, let me say, even as a Habs supporter, I am extremely happy for Jack Campbell. This is a great story, a feel-good story, and it's kind of nice to see the emotional side of a professional athlete instead of just saying, you know, we all work together, we got the big 2 points. He opened up a little bit last night. He kind of hinted at, you know, it was a long kind of road to get here, and he teared up while talking to Sean McKenzie. That being said, yeah, without Willie, okay, yeah, they won 3-2.
You can win a game or two.
Win a game or two, but I don't like
every other night
like
for 2 months
going
in the playoffs.
Into the playoffs, yeah, without him. And again, I love Joe Thornton and I love Jason Spezza. They're quality human beings. They've been incredible players for a long time, but are these guys going to make an impact in the playoffs?
They might in a game, but
again a game
every other
too.
Night. They're a total combined age. Why am I saying that in Howard Finkel's voice in my mind? At a total combined age, they're 80 years old.
Yeah,
the two of them put together.
Yeah,
I hate to be ageist, but
I mean they're a young 80, but still they're 80.
Father time catches up to.
So I don't know,
all of us.
But to get back to your point, to answer your question, yeah, it looks like the Leafs are going to have to try to pull the trigger on something here, right, Zig?
Yeah, they're trying to make moves. I mean, Kyle Dubas has talked about it. He said he's ready to make a deal. It's hard. And if you look at the Palmieri, Sajak deal, that to me, does that mean it's first rounder for all these rentals and these deadline deals? I don't think so. I don't know at this point if the price is too high. We're going to get the real prices for what players are going to cost this weekend, right? Teams are going to start coming down off of what they want. But yeah, I think this is a time where the Leafs do need to add. If you're not comfortable with Hutchinson as a third, they're going to make a move there. I'm concerned about Freddie's injury. The fact that I know Keith said he's not out for the season and it's nothing too serious. I'm even concerned with the lingering injuries, the ones where they're not going to get surgery right now. They're not going to be a long term, but they're going to nag. And even Campbell's got one right now, right? We saw him the other night against Winnipeg, kind of limping after a stop on Kyle Connor. I just, at this point, you need three guys going in the playoffs. You saw what happened to the Avalanche last year. You got to make sure you have enough guys to go in because if injuries do happen, and if you have two goaltenders with lingering injuries, I think goaltending and bringing in a third has got to be at the top of their list.
You saw what happened with the Avalanche last year. Who was that third string goaltender that played some of those playoff games? I'm trying to remember. Oh, it was Michael Hutchinson. We're not here to crap on him, but let's be honest. That is not what you want the default plan to be heading into the playoffs. Although I would say this, if you are on your third string goaltender at any point in the playoffs for any more than a period here or a game there, you're in trouble.
Yeah, the wheels have already come off at that point.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Blue Jays play the home opener tonight. Kevin Barker will be along for a full half hour at 7:30. George Springer is eligible to come off the injured list today, but that is not going to happen because he's got a strained quad or some kind of quad injury, pending MRI results that we hope are not serious. This is another setback for a guy who started the year hurt with an oblique and it is another game or two or three or four or more that the Blue Jays are going to have to go without their presumed leadoff hitter at a time early in the season where the bats have not yet put it together. There have been some guys who've had big games, but that lineup has not, 1 through 9, become the buzzsaw yet that we anticipate it will be. Still very early, but we haven't seen it yet.
You're right, Scotty. It is very early. But I'm going to take the alarmist approach to this. I'm very worried about George Springer and these injuries. The oblique and the quad, they're soft tissue injuries, and they're soft tissue injuries to big muscles. And the big muscles are the ones that move your body. Like, they're the ones that carry you around. So the possibility that these could be lingering, and the possibility that he could re-injure these injuries if not given enough time to heal, that's very real. And so I'm a little bit worried. Are you?
Well, I'm not a doctor. That's the problem, right? But you're right. I mean, he hadn't played yet.
Yeah. And he's already got two injuries, soft tissue injuries.
Yeah. He doesn't have a history, though, of being hurt. So this is what's so confusing. And the weird thing about the oblique injury is that he just kind of felt something. It wasn't, this is what we're told. Right? And this is the other thing. It makes it hard. This is a first world problem, but it makes it hard when you're not there every day. Dan Schulman has alluded to this, others. Doesn't matter what sport you're covering. When you can't walk up to a guy in the clubhouse, in the locker room, and say, hey, what's up? And if you have a relationship...
And look him in the eye when you do that.
Yeah, and if you have a relationship that's built on trust and he tells you some things, maybe you get some insight. Yeah, I've been feeling something for a while or what have you. All of this stuff over Zoom, you really just got to rely on the information that you've got. So we were told, just kind of sprung out of nowhere, this oblique thing. And then they went and got him an MRI, and they realized it wasn't a grade one, which would be the least of the problematic strains. It was a grade two oblique strain.
Yeah.
So you're right. I mean, these soft tissue things can linger. And if the quad is in any way semi-serious, you got to keep them out.
Yep.
Because these are injuries that can get worse. I'm not ringing the alarm bells or waving the red flags with George Springer yet. Still very early, as I said, in the season. I think this lineup can compensate for his absence, but you don't want something in early to mid-April getting worse because you tried to push it too hard, and then all of a sudden you're not back until June 1st, June 15th. Teams can fall out of the race pretty, pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Springer's the difference between being in, being out. Pitching is going to have a lot to do with that.
Well, they have the luxury of time for now, but for how much time do they have that luxury? I don't know.
Yeah. You ready to make your Masters picks?
I've got a long list. Oh, it looks my like my Masters picks looks like a dog's breakfast this morning. I've probably got about 15 names on here. I got circles. I got question marks. I've got
Sheep can fear, which is a dog's breakfast, so that makes sense.
Well, you should have seen his dog's breakfast. He's got green tea in one hand, sheep kefir, or however you want to pronounce it, in another hand. He's got hard-boiled eggs. Those are plant-based hard-boiled eggs.
Those are yours.
Yeah. Those plants behind you are laying eggs all of a sudden. Yes, those are mine.
Who's cooking eggs?
Who's cooking eggs in here? Oops, it actually was me. That's my fault. Adam Stanley, leadoff golf analyst with us now, and his Masters report brought to you by RBC. A Masters champion must rely on his knowledge of the storied Augusta National to win. With 150 years of insight and expertise, RBC sees things differently. All right, Mr. Stanley. Here's how we're going to do it, boys. I'm not so concerned about overlap.
Okay.
So we can have some overlap here, but what we're going to do is we're going to take four golfers each, lowest score wins.
Okay.
And we'll pick a fifth golfer who must be different.
Okay.
As a potential tiebreaker.
Okay. And you're going to keep track of all this?
I'm going to keep track of all this. I have my pen.
Keep track of it all.
My paper ready. I am ready to go. So, Adam?
So is this total score to par? Is that what we're doing?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Adam, you are our distinguished guest. Then we will go with Ziggy. Then we will go with Hugh. Then we will go with me. 1, 2, 3, 4. You get to make your first selection. Who do you like?
I got to go with Justin Thomas. I think he has improved at the Masters every time he's played, finished fourth there in November, coming in off the big win at the Players. So my number one pick has to be Justin Thomas.
Ziggy.
I'm going with Patrick Cantlay.
See, when you said Patrick, I was waiting for the next syllable. Patrick Cantlay.
No, that's your guy. I can't take one of your guys.
Oh, you're giving me the heel, eh? Why do you like Cantlay?
I think right now he's a guy that, you know, he's ranked up there. He's one of not the favorite, but he's up there for one of the favorites. I thought he played well in Texas. I don't know. He's a guy I feel like it fits this course really well. I don't know. It's just a feeling for some of these guys. I like the fact where he is in the world rankings right now. He's having a good season. And he plays well at Augusta. That's kind of what I look for.
All right, Hugh.
All right, this seems to be kind of a sentimental pick.
Patrick Reed.
No. Sentimental and Patrick Reed are not used in the same sentence. I'm going to go with John Rahm. Brand new dad. He's got three straight top tens in the Masters. The only other guy to score like that is Dustin Johnson. So John Rahm for me is my first pick.
All right. And you think I'm just going to go Bryson, or you think I'm going to go Patrick Reed? You think I'm going to pick one of the heels here right out of the gate, and you would be right.
Who you got?
I am going to take...
He can't say it. He can't even say it.
I am going to take Patrick Reed, the 2018 Masters champion.
He couldn't do it. He couldn't let it
Captain
pass.
America, baby.
One of the best putters on the tour.
He couldn't let it pass.
And you probably know where I'm going next if I can sneak my guy through. I know we're allowed to double up, so I could take him anyway. But I'm trying to keep it off the board here right now. I'm going with Patrick Reed. We're not going to snake this, okay? So we'll do 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, and circle it back to Adam.
Well, Patrick Reed's wife got booted off the property on Tuesday.
She's a wonderful person. So maybe he can invite his parents.
Maybe this
in her place. They all get
Mending
along.
Fences.
Why'd she get kicked off the property? That's what I want to know.
She was talking on a Bluetooth set out down Amen Corner, and somebody realized, she wasn't actually talking to herself. She was talking on her phone, so she got escorted
from the premises. Yes.
There's always something.
Yeah.
There's always something with our guy, Patty Reed.
With our guy.
Scotty's guy.
All right. I'm going to hate myself in about 3.5 hours for picking my next pick, but I can't quit on him, and I got to go with Rory McIlroy as my next pick. You know, he's going to try to win the career Grand Slam again. Who knows? I think because his storyline is kind of off the board this year, and because there's such low expectations, because he's been playing poorly and he doesn't know why he's playing poorly, maybe this is the year that he turns things around. So, you know, when he goes out in 41 on his front nine today, I'm going to regret this big time. But after he shoots, 66, 67, 64 to finish tied for ninth, then I won't hate it all that much. So Rory McIlroy, my number two pick.
All right, so a little self-loathing to start the second round of our Masters selections here. Ziggy, who do you have in round two?
I've got Cameron Smith, only golfer at the Masters to ever shoot all rounds in the 60s. Is that, am I correct with that?
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Really soft course in November. Yeah.
That's something. And well, if you can go out and do that,
Yeah.
You have a good idea on what it takes to win. I'm just hoping he doesn't lose it today where he goes out and's too aggressive. I think he can get a little bit too confident out there. And my one thing on Patrick Cantlay, it wasn't in Texas, it was the Pebble Pro Am he finished tied for third. I thought it was in Texas.
To your point about Cameron Smith and a softer course, that they're expecting perhaps a centimeter and a half of rain tomorrow.
Yeah, so tomorrow evening and then into Friday. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean that could change the way that the course plays. Hugh.
I can't believe both of these guys are still available. Dustin Johnson and Jordan Spieth.
I know.
I'm flipping a coin here. But if you believe in momentum, which I kind of do, guys already won here. Jordan Spieth. That's what I'm taking. I'm riding the hot horse.
All right.
Which sounds much worse than it actually is.
Sounds painful. Hope you have a saddle for that. Saddle, well, then I'm jumping in. I'm an absolute vulture. I was just circling because I had both those names on my list next too. I'm going with Wayne's son-in-law. I'm going with Dustin Johnson. I know he won in November, and when he backs it up with a victory here on Sunday, I'll have my own little pimento sandwich. Have a heart attack on Monday morning, and Hugh, you can take over the show. You enjoy that.
What exactly is a pimento? Yeah, I want to know what that is.
Well, I don't know. The only thing I envision is
there's a pimento cheese.
Yeah,
I think.
But there's this sandwich place in Pittsburgh that's it's not pimento.
It's pimento.
Adam,
what the hell's a pimento?
Well, pimento is like a jarred red pepper. Like a spicy pepper. So they mix. It's kind like conceptually, it's kind of gross. Like it's a couple bricks of cream cheese. I think it's two cups of mayonnaise. Mm. I think it's a cup of pimentos and then some old cheddar mixed up and slapped on Wonder Bread.
The pro move
is to take the crispy chicken cutlet from the crispy chicken sandwich at Augusta and then put it into the pimento cheese sandwich. That is a lunch.
And you came here for the golf coverage.
Oh, my God. I'm so
you
glad you're on the show.
You came here for the golf coverage. Just picture my guy, Patrick Reed, with a bib on.
Just hammering sandwiches.
Jamming those down his gullet with a green jacket that half fits.
Well, remember, he went to the, right, Adam? He went to the drive-thru after he won the green jacket in 2018, right? Did he not?
He did. Yeah. He did. And Phil's done that, too. And Bubba Watson went to Waffle House with the green jacket.
Awesome.
So it's been a few places.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Round three, Adam.
Round three. This is going to be an off-the-board pick because his putting is not great. And I think you do have to have, you know, something working with the flat stick at Augusta National. But fingers crossed that he's turned things around because he is the number one ball striker on tour. I'm going with the PGA champion from last year, Colin Morikawa.
There you go.
Oh, my goodness me. Like oh, my goodness me. I was just getting ready to unroll my Colin Morikawa.
Yeah, Ziggy was ready with the deep cuts, the under-the-radar third and fourth rounders.
There it is.
Oh, yeah.
I have it right there.
Ziggy just held it up.
Oh, my
I can
goodness.
Vouch.
Well, all right. Well, we're under the gun here. We're up against time here. I'm going to go Webb Simpson.
Webb Simpson.
Bit of a sleeper. Yeah.
Okay. Hugh,
very
round three.
Though.
Yeah. I'm going to go with a little off the board as well. Daniel Berger. The guy should have been there last year, but, you know, they had already set the field. So he was on fire last year, didn't get a chance to play. He's already won this year. So I got Daniel Berger as my third pick.
I'm going with Tony Finau. To me, if you can dislocate an ankle, pop it back in and still have a good weekend, you're my guy. We're into the fourth and final round here. Without one of the big names mentioned, let's see if one of us throws it out there. Adam, could it be you? Who do you have?
I don't think it's going to be the big name. I'm picking Corey Connors as my fourth.
Okay. Where's the tattoo, pal? Where's the tattoo?
Corey's got all the tools. This could be a big breakthrough week for him. Should be fun.
All right. Okay. The Maple Leaf flag. I love it.
I've got Adam Scott, not a favorite, a little bit of a sleeper, hasn't missed a cut in 10 years. It's a second shot golf course and one of the best iron players, you know, his whole career. Looking at Adam Scott, he's odds are 55-1. So not a favorite, but not a total, you know, underdog.
Hugh.
Hasn't been playing great lately, but he has the potential. Matthew Wolf. Matthew Wolf.
Like it.
I was waiting for that. If you were, and I gotta keep up with you, Hugh. I was fully expect that's a Hugh Burrell thing. Yeah. I'm embarrassed that I had to initiate that.
So am I, actually.
All right. Well,
it was Hugh's pick.
That's right.
Okay. I'm going with Bryson because I need to complete the NWO version of a Masters grouping here. I've got Patrick Reed and Bryson DeChambeau. I'm going with the full heel. All right. So I don't think we need a fifth round because we managed to pick different golfers for each of our foursomes. Adam, we're going to track this all day.
Love it.
Obviously, the tournament starts in about 35 minutes time, and we'll all be plunked on our couches later today to watch it. We'll see how we're doing tomorrow morning. We'll get your thoughts on round one heading into round two. Hopefully, the weather holds up tomorrow, and we'll obviously revisit this with you on Monday morning as well. Thanks, pal.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks, bud. So much.
All right. Adam Stanley. This music just makes me wistful. Oh, God. We're never going to hear the end of that. No. Adam Stanley's Masters Report, or in this case, Adam Stanley's Masters Grouping. Brought to you by RBC. A Masters champion must rely on his knowledge of the story at Augusta National to win. With 150 years of insight and expertise, RBC sees things differently. The Blue Jays are 3-3 off their first road trip. They've got their home opener in Dunedin tonight. George Springer will not be a part of it. The bats have not yet come to life. What do we like and what are we worried about six games in? And you can get your text questions in as well to 590-590. Our buddy, Kevin Barker, for the half hour next. I just couldn't let this go. I just let it roll.
It's a good tune.
Why not? We're sitting here sort of grooving, chilling. Ziggy's in full-on concert mode over there at home.
Is he air guitaring?
Yeah. Ziggy and the Plants.
Great name for a band, by the way.
Ziggy and the Plants. Yeah. I like it. Ziggy Plant Dust. Oh, my God. Jay's home opener tonight. George Springer, we've talked about that, out with now a quad problem, pending MRI results. So that is disconcerting, but let's just hope it's not serious. Let's hope the MRI reveals something that he can recover from relatively quickly and they can get him back in the lineup. Because the one thing that's been happening here, Ziggy, is that while there have been some pretty good individual performances over specific games, there has not been a cohesiveness to this lineup. And one thing that stood out to me yesterday, Kyle Gibson was pretty good for the Texas Rangers, yesterday's Rangers starting pitcher, but the Jays did him a ton of favors. This is a very right-handed lineup, and if you're going to throw a first pitch off the plate breaking ball to these right-handed hitters, that if they were to take that pitch, it would be ball one, 1-0, and you're going to swing and miss constantly, you're going to constantly put the pitcher in pitcher's counts, that can be problematic, and we saw it.
I'm just wondering if this is a glimpse into what is in store for the year, or is it just the start, right? And I know nothing replicates an actual regular season game or a playoff game, right? You can hit all the batting practice you want. You can play in spring training games, but until these guys get into some real games and we get the season going here, it's going to take longer than six games. I've never played baseball at a high competitive level. I don't consider Father Mike McGivney in grade 12's baseball team.
Well, what about the batting baseball cage team last October?
I did hit a 101 or whatever. It was in the, it was above 100. It's does it really matter after it's over 100? Right. So, but in all seriousness, this is one of those things where it takes players a couple games. We talked about guys in the NHL. We talk about guys in the NBAs. Some guys start slow. I feel like out of all the sports, baseball is the toughest to kind of get into midseason form right away. Like it doesn't happen. I don't think there's anything you can do. I don't care how many sim games you have. If you're in and out of the lineup in spring training and you're trying to find your timing, until you get in a real game, until a regular season gets going, that's when you kind of, you have something to build off of. And I'm hoping that's a situation with the Jays right now, just getting your feet wet. They're getting their timing down. And after the first, 10, 15 games, then let's see what you have. But right now, hitting's contagious too, right? As soon as three, four guys, as soon as we see half the lineup start hitting well and stringing some bats together, that's when I think the floodgates will open for this group. And that just hasn't happened yet. It's been very spotty.
All right, Kevin Barker is here with us. He is the co-host of Baseball Central with Jeff Blair. Most days, as long as the Blue Jays aren't playing an afternoon game, it is 2 to 3 Eastern here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and you can hear it at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Kevin is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Just picking up on what Ziggy had to say there, Kevin, I'm looking yesterday. The Jays made a lot of 1-0 counts, 0-1. Little jumpy at the Kyle Gibson breaking pitch. And he just continued to play to that scouting report, and they continued to give into it.
Yeah, well, Ziggy was making a solid point. I believe a little bit of that. It is early. It is six games. Garrett Cole's pretty tough to open your season. Kyle Gibson yesterday, had a cutter, sinker, slider. He was moving it around, 94, 95, nothing special. It wasn't 98, 99. We've seen it. A lot of this, though. I realize Kevin Biggio's gotten off to a slow start. Rowdy Tellez, hasn't shown up. Teoscar Hernandez has been a little spotty. Lourdes Gurriel Jr., he's a free swinger. Free swingers takes a long time to find the barrel of the baseball. It just does. When you swing at everything, you don't have a certain strike zone. It takes you a little while to get locked in and find the timing and the bat path and all those things. The velocity is a theme with this team, though. How many guys, besides Bo, do you know that if that guy throws 150 miles an hour, that's an exaggeration, obviously, but if it's a super, super hard guy, 95 plus, how many of these guys in this lineup do you think can consistently barrel that ball up?
I think Vladdy can do it the way he looks. I think Randall Grichuk can do it. As long as, of course, he's not lunging at the slider the way he's been going. But you're right. I mean, it's fewer and farther between as we sit here right now, Kevin, than we'd probably like it to be. Certainly, yeah. Is not either of the two left-handed hitters, Biggio or Tellez.
No, I think is it an approach? Is it a team-wide approach? Is it something that Guillermo Martinez is saying? Okay, we set breaking ball until we have to fight off the fastball. I was always taught when I was hitting, when I was coming up, you can't hit velocity unless you're looking for it. And the greatest player on the planet, which is Mike Trout, well, every time you hear him talk, he says, I hunt fastball and I adjust to everything else. Well, he's the greatest player on the planet. If it works for him, it would have to work for the guys for the Blue Jays team who are trying to establish themselves as everyday big leaguers. That's the one thing. Again, you don't want to get too excited, but we did see a lot of this last year. We did see a lot of guys who were late, who looked like they were in between. Now, that could be numerous reasons. That could be they're not very good fastball hitters, or they don't have the approach of or the mindset that I'm going up looking for a fastball. I'm going to look for a fastball in my zone, and when I get it, I'm going to put my best swing on it, and I'm going to hammer this thing. It's very rare that we saw that last year, and it's starting to look that way the first six games. That's the big adjustment. You know, it's not the pitching. Pitching's been halfway decent except Tanner Roark. It's not the pitching. The bullpen's been great. Defensively, look, it's going to look like it looks until these guys, you know, start to get their timing and their rhythm defensively. You know, Vladdy, talk about Vladdy to your blue in the face. Vladdy's not a perfect player. Vladdy's a hitter-first guy. We should stop talking about him like he is a perfect player. You know, Bo Bichette's learning how to play shortstop. I didn't like Bo Bichette DHing yesterday. You know, he's a young guy. He is your everyday shortstop. Why five games through the season he's DHing already? That to me is just, I get it. HP departments, 2021, times have changed. But the only way guys get better at things that they are not really excellent at, they do it. And you do it consistently. Your body just gets used to doing it. You get into a consistent routine. You're not always walking to the lineup card before you show up at the game and looking where you're playing. Are you DHing? Are you not playing? They need to just get into a consistent thing, especially the main guys. The main guys just need to get into that Groundhog Day kind of thing where it's, I know exactly what I'm doing. I know exactly how many swings I need to take in the cage. I know exactly how many ground balls I need to take because this is what I'm going to do every single day, and then you adjust from there. So, you know, it's, again, it's early. They're 3-3. Would you rather them be 4-2, 5-1? Yeah. You know, the Rangers not a very good team. You know, and Ryu, look, I was the one guy that said maybe he takes a step back. You know, he has pitched a lot. He's not a hard thrower. But listen, you know, mechanically, a guy that can hit the same spot most of the time, which is the black into a righty and way to a lefty, he dominates that one little part of the plate, and then he expands with that changeup with a little bit of sink. The backdoor cutter's been really good for him. He's been excellent. And maybe we should just, you know, let them see if they can make some adjustments and try and figure this out a little bit more with the fastball and the velocity. And I still think they can win 90 games. They just need some things to fall into place and get into a better routine, though.
We know Ryu doesn't like to go deep into games, so he pitched 7 yesterday, 7 strikeouts, 2 earned runs. If the Jays are up in a game like that, does Ryu come out earlier, or do you keep him in the fact that you're down, it's a tight game, he kind of found his stuff after he got settled in? Is that the situation yesterday?
Yeah, I don't agree with the first thing about you saying he doesn't want to go deep in games. Yeah, he does. You know, he's more efficient in a certain amount of pitches, right? It's about that 70 pitch mark. Yesterday he was locating a little better. The breaking ball had a little bit better bite to it. The changeup had a little better sink to it. He was rolling into the seventh inning with right at about 70 pitches. That's excellent. That's being efficient. That's throwing lots of strikes. You know, he faced 28 batters. He threw first pitch strikes to 22 of them. You know, lefties were 0-for-9 with 4 strikeouts against him. I said this, and I'll keep saying it. Really good left-handed pitchers dominate left-handed batters. That they eliminate, that's like cruise control. So they have to worry about the right-handed batters. He did that yesterday. He's very efficient. Look, he's the least of their worries. You know, it's very impressive to watch a guy methodically pick his way through a game. And it's like if one thing's not working, like if I can't, speaking of Ryu, if I can't get that fastball where I want it, how do I pitch and keep my team in the game until I find where I can get back to that fastball? It's very impressive. It's a lot of fun to just watch him and Danny Jansen. You know, Danny Jansen now, there's better rhythm and timing. You know, there's not a whole lot of, you know, putting the finger down, he's shaking. He's putting a different finger down, he's just standing there staring at you. There's not a ton of that. You know, you don't see a ton of him walking out to the mound and what do you want to do here? How much do you want to throw? If he doesn't swing at this, what are you going to throw? So there is better rhythm and timing with him and Danny. He's impressive. Like it's a lot of fun to watch him. And, you know, they start hitting some fastballs throughout this lineup. They're going to win a ton of games. And with their bullpen, with the superstars they have, they do have superstars. They, you know, Bo Bichette's a superstar. Vladdy could turn into offensive superstar. Marcus Semien, look, short and quick, easy approach, you know, sort of that lunch pail kind of guy. You know, he's the right-handed Kevin Biggio, sort of. So they do have some pieces that can get them where they need to go.
With Kevin Barker on leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And everything we bring up here is using the context of 6 games. We're only a week into the season. There is a long way to go. and this is a very young team with a lot of growth that it's going to experience this year. That plus, you're not going to be perfect every night, every afternoon. Mistakes are going to be made. The difference in the game because of the Semien home run in the eighth inning, Kevin, turned out to be the run that scored, the Trevino run, the second run of the second inning, mm-hmm. because Vladimir Guerrero Jr., I don't even want to call that a scoop because I think the Semien throw got there in the air.
Yeah, it did.
Vladdy misplays the Semien throw. Now, I think Vladdy's been good at first base so far this year. I know we've talked about a couple of his stretches over the weekend at Yankee Stadium and pulling his foot off the bag, et cetera, still learning a new position. And again, nobody's going to be perfect out there. But these are the little things over the course of a season that can cost you games. And if you miss the playoffs by two or three games, you're going to look back and say, ouch. And it's the type of play, given the fact that the offense isn't going right now, that ends up being the difference between winning a series against a bad team and losing a series against a bad team.
Yeah, well, you want to make the playoffs. You talk about carrying trophies across fields. You make the routine play boring. That's a routine play that a first baseman, not even a good first baseman, a first baseman at the big league level should make 1,000 times out of 1,000 times. And these are plays that you can't get complacent around the bag. I've said this before. You know, when you get very stationary, most guys that are not comfortable around the bag, they want to run over, they want to get stationary, and they try and, you know, bend at the knees to get in a little bit better athletic position because they don't really know where the bag's at. That's why they run over and put their foot physically on the bag and turn around and look for where the throw's coming to. That's a very hard thing to do because you get very you get very stiff. You don't want to get your eyes towards where the ball's going to end up like he did yesterday. The ball sort of got behind his front leg, which when it gets – the further it gets behind you, the less you can see the ball. You know, if his foot works a little bit better, he can turn his glove over sideways. When you turn your glove over sideways, it forces your eyes to watch the ball go into the glove. It's a real simple thing, and hopefully, you know, the more the coaches see him, the better his footwork can get around the bag. Should we get used to seeing sort of things like this? I don't know. You know, I think he's played pretty good over there. But you know, all things considered, you know, all the weight loss he's went through, the trying to become a better hitter, you know, trying to be the savior for the Toronto Blue Jays organization, which is, you know, unfair for him. He's got a lot of pressure on him to perform every single time he goes on the field. And you know, it doesn't help. He watches media. He listens to the Instagram and watches people breaking down every single little thing that he does wrong. It's hard. You know, I think we just need to step back. Okay, he's young. He's learning a new position. Maybe he ain't real good at it. We don't really know that yet. He hasn't played over there enough. Just sort of let him figure it out. Maybe if he hits 300, hopefully he does, because if he doesn't, then people are just going to be throwing their hands in the air and saying he's a bust and he's not any good. You know how the conversations are going to go. So hopefully offensively he takes off, and he sure does look offensively a lot better. You know, he's using most of the field. He's driving the ball to right center. His bat plane is really good, which is a big deal. Stop trying to hit the ball in the air. Like, you are a line drive hitter who hits the ball so hard that a fence can't hold it. You know, that's what I hate. You know, Danny Jansen, poor little Danny Jansen thinks the same thing all the time, that I have to hit the ball in the air. You're not a home run hitter. Why are you hitting the ball in the air? Hit a line drive, and you're seeing the results of what Danny Jansen is going through. So it's sort of nice to watch Vladdy go up and have a little bit better at bat. They're going to need him. They're going to need him to, I wouldn't say carry this team, but stay up to par with Bo Bichette. They're going to need that.
Kevin Barker is with us coming up on the other side. Rowdy Tellez, he doesn't believe in himself right now. And the question is can he eventually catch up to that fastball at or above the belt 94, 95 miles an hour? Certainly couldn't do it in a pinch hit at bat yesterday against Ian Kennedy, and it's an ongoing theme with Rowdy. All right, Kev, let's get right into the Rowdy Tellez situation. And, I mean, you're a former pro athlete. Ziggy's a former pro athlete. Anybody talks about confidence, the importance of confidence. I look at Rowdy Tellez's face. I look at Rowdy Tellez's body language right now, And I see a guy who doesn't believe he's any good. And whether he is or he isn't is going to play out over time. But man, oh man, you take the best pitch to hit in that at bat against Kennedy, 0-1, 94 mile an hour fastball, or the first pitch runs at 0-1, 94 mile an hour fastball. Then you work the count 3-1, and then Kennedy says, here, hit it, with back-to-back straight 95 mile an hour fastballs, and you're not even close. Like, this is, it's early, but it's problematic.
Yeah, okay. You mentioned the time. It takes time to do that. I'm not sure they're going to give him time. I was wondering, and I picked a little fun at why is Charlie Montoyo coming out and telling everybody that Rowdy Tellez has made the team out of spring training. I didn't even really know that Rowdy Tellez was, you know, had to perform enough to make a team. I think that shows you a little bit of what they think of him. And it'll be very interesting to see how long of a leash they give him. Are they going to give him enough time to – or enough at-bats, or enough consistent at-bats. You know, DHing with Randall Grichuk thing coming and George Springer, when will George Springer be back? How will that all work? Where does Rowdy Tellez fit into that? Are they going to give him an opportunity to figure out how to get the foot down a little bit earlier, level out his bat plane a little bit better, you know, zone in on one area, you know, don't chase, don't try and hit pitchers' pitches. You know, he's not seeing the ball well. What do you do when you don't see the ball well? You take strikes. You swing at balls. That looks exactly like Rowdy Tellez. And the most interesting thing about that, we know the power. You know, he is a streaky power hitter who could, you know, you would think could hit 40 if he gets on a super hot streak of hitting home runs. It just will be very, very interesting to see if they allow him or give him enough chances to work through this. Because that's what it's going to take. He's going to have consistent playing time. You know, coming off the bench after you sat over there for 3 hours and trying to hit 94-95 after you sit over there for 3 or 4 hours, when you don't really understand a routine that you need to go through to try and be short and quick. You know, again, he's a straight-up-and-down guy. A lot of straight-up-and-down guys, when they gain ground towards their target, which his front foot is trying to gain ground towards the pitcher, his head moves a lot. Well, when your head moves a lot, what's the ball do? The ball moves a lot, and you don't see it as well as you normally see it, and that takes time. He's going to have to just consistently do it over and over and over again. So that'll be one of the things here with this team early on. You know, it's sort of like Tanner Roark. What do you do with Tanner Roark? Well, we're going to find out what they want to do with Rowdy Tellez.
With Rowdy, is it tough to – like, is the pressure on him at this point when you – like, when you're not playing – you know, when you're just DHing, does that not play tricks on you when your things aren't going well? Like, it's like if the offense isn't going well, yeah, I'm great at first. But if he's not at first and he's just DHing and now he's pinch hitting, you know, only at bat once in a game, does that not weigh on you as a player?
Yeah, well, you weren't doing your job as a hockey player, whatever that job was doing, you know, skating, playing defense, scoring goals. Was there pressure? You know, Rowdy Tellez is not a great player. He's not a superstar. Superstars get opportunities to fail. You know, people like me and people like Rowdy Tellez got to perform when they get the chance to perform. And when they're not, pressure starts to build. No, by the way, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. looks a little different. You know, last year he was a little bit heavier and, you know, didn't take care of his body, and you had an opportunity to sort of slip in there. And there's competition between you and Vladdy for playing time. Now, all of a sudden, Vladdy looks different. You know, he's a little bit more athletic. The ball looks like it's coming off his bat a little bit harder than it used to be. Now, I have to double what I was doing last year. You might overswing. You may be chasing a few more pitches. Sure, it's human nature. But I think the bigger thing is, will the Blue Jays give an opportunity to get out of it? That'll be the interesting part of this.
With Kevin Barker, so the Angels are coming in for 4, and that'll be followed by the Yankees for 3, this first homestand of the season. I mean, this ain't going to be easy.
Nope.
I don't know what the Angels have up and down in terms of pitching, in terms of quality of pitching, but like the Blue Jays, when things are going, they have a stout offensive lineup. So this is our first opportunity in real life games that count to see how this Dunedin Park is going to play at night in the Florida warmth with 2 bopping teams, Kev. I mean, this could be a highly offensive series.
Yeah, it is. You know, it may be less about the pitching and more about the offenses. That's the thing. Shohei Ohtani, you're going to see him pitching. You're going to see him hit. That'd be sort of cool.
I
want to see if he can can he do that an entire year? Can he do that a half a year? Scotty, you know everybody you talk to that comes out of that pitches always talk about routines. How do you have a routine pitching and a routine hitting and think your body can handle that for a long period of time? So it'd be very interesting to watch Shohei and Mike Trout. Mike Trout's sort of been forgotten in all this, and he's raking. I mean, he is smoking hot. You know, they had a day off, so they're a little bit healthier. Now they're waiting in Dunedin. You know, if the wind's blowing in, we talked to Ben Wagner, haven't been Dunedin in a little while for obvious reasons. He's saying that if the wind's blowing straight into all parts of that park plays super small. Is the Blue Jays lineup, if they show up to that field and they throw grass in the air, which is what every good hitter should do, throw grass in the air and see which way that grass is blowing. So now I know, you know, where I need to look for certain pitches that I can maybe back leg a little bit and get a ball in the air and try to hit a home run that way. What if the wind is blowing straight in? Do you think this lineup is good enough to think hit on top of the baseball, hit a line drive, hit a one hopper to an outfielder? That'll be an interesting part of this. So the ballpark plays a lot into it. Hopefully it's not blowing that way, and maybe it's blowing one way or the other, and hopefully it's straight out. And the Blue Jays hitter can gain a little bit of confidence, you know, start squaring up some baseball, start hitting some velocity. Baseball, sports in general, is all about confidence, and they need some confidence right now.
You bet. Well, we're looking forward to the weekend. I always say, too, Kev, like, whenever the Jays play the Angels, it's an opportunity to remind anyone who lives on the fringes of the sport, ducks in and out, Mike Trout is this generation's Mickey Mantle. Like, that's who we're talking about here. We're not talking about, hey, he's a really good player, somebody you should watch. This is this generation's Mickey Mantle.
Yeah, he's so good at it, he makes the game look boring.
Yeah, different level.
It is. He's a man amongst boys, for sure.
And if he played for the New York Yankees or a team that went to the playoffs a lot, he'd be celebrated more. But the Angels went to the playoffs once in his tenure, 2014, got swept in three straight by the Royals. I mean, and he plays at 10 o'clock at night when he's at home. So I don't think we get the chance to appreciate him enough. Thanks, pal. We'll do this again on Tuesday morning, and you know we'll be listening at 2 o'clock this afternoon to Baseball Central, you and Blair.
Thanks a lot. Have a good day, everybody.
Right. Kevin Barker. Brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com. And the Blue Jays take the field tonight, as we've been talking about, for the home opener down at TD Ballpark in Dunedin. The LA Angels are the opponent, and we are giving away Blue Jays prize packs to celebrate. Listen for the secret player names all day today, and then when you hear them, text them to 590-590 to enter. So the call is out now. Text Grichuk, G-R-I-C-H-U-K. Wonder who picked this name. Might have been Ziggy. Text Grichuk to 590-590 right now. Find our contest rules at sportsnet.ca/590. And make sure to...
Randall.
Say what? Say what?
My boy Randall.
Yeah, say what?
Randall, Randall came down to earth yesterday.
Well, that's all right. I mean, he's, just get me three hits tonight, Randall, and I'll forgive you. I'll go easy on you. You can check the contest rules at sportsnet.ca/590 and make sure to tune in tonight for the pregame opening ceremonies at 6:30 right here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, for a piece of home, the Toronto Gay Men's Chorus will perform the anthems from Toronto. So that's a cool thing tonight, as everything is done remotely to keep people safe during COVID-19. Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne coming up at 8:35. Colby Armstrong, the ex-Leaf, the ex-Hab. There was no William Nylander last night due to a possible COVID contact. What would Colby do if he were Kyle Dubas? I'm going to ask Colby, what would you do if you were Kyle Dubas? That should freak him out. Colby Armstrong next, but first, here's what we're talking about this morning on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590. The Fan, the Maple Leafs' most prolific goal scorer, Austin Matthews, got his 28th of the year. TJ Brody, his first of the year. And a guy in the middle, Zach Hyman, scored his 13th of the year. Guys at the ends of the spectrum and right in the middle contributed to the Leafs' 3-2 regulation time victory over the Montreal Canadiens last night. How about Jack Campbell? He made 32 saves in the victory. He is 10-0-0 this year. That is the best start to a season by a Toronto Maple Leafs goaltender in franchise history. The Raptors will be significantly undermanned tonight when they play the Chicago Bulls down in Tampa. Kyle Lowry with the foot, Freddie Van Vliet with the hip, Rodney Hood with the hip, bunch of hips. Paul Watson is in the COVID protocols. Patrick McCaw has a knee problem. Jalen Harris with a hip problem. All sidelined for the Raptors. This is a big game for them. Raps, Bulls, you're saying, what do you mean a big game? Toronto is two games back of Chicago for the 10th seed in the Eastern Conference, which is the bottom seed for that little play-in tournament for the right to get into the full tournament when the NBA playoffs start in about a month from now. And the Blue Jays play their home opener down in Dunedin. The Los Angeles Angels come to town. It is the first of a four-game series. Ross Stripling gets the ball for the Blue Jays. It is a 7:07 first pitch on Sportsnet. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On the TV side, Sportsnet has a full hour of pregame coverage starting at 6 o'clock, and we pick things up here with some pregame ceremonies, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, at 6:30. Ready for our next guest? What would he do if he was Kyle Dubas? Would he want to be Kyle Dubas? Colby Armstrong, a former Leaf, a former Hab, is with us. It's been a while, pal. How are things in suburban Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh. How you guys doing? Good morning, first of all. Things are going okay. We got the sun is shining. That's pretty good. We've got the Frozen Four NCAA hockey tournament here in Pittsburgh in the next few days, today. And then on Saturday, we got home opener. You said the Jays. We got the Pirates.
Oh, and aren't they looking good?
Yeah. Oh yeah. After their first game, they won, and then they've just not won since. Yeah. So, yeah, it's not that part isn't very exciting, but I'm actually excited about it just because we can start kind of going to their stadium, and they have a really great stadium. It's really nice to go to a game there.
Yeah. Pick one or two of your favorite visiting teams and go and watch because. Your Pirates are going to lose. Your Pirates over under on losses this year, 98.5. And if you took the over, I wouldn't argue with you, Colby. All right. let's get right down to business. Let's make you Kyle Dubas for a minute. Does that freak you the hell out?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that would probably anyone, right? Yeah. Kind of not though, just because of, the strength of their team. Like, they have a really strong team, and when things weren't good with Freddie injury and Freddie not playing well, all of a sudden you have Jack Campbell, who's got 10 wins in a row, and things are looking pretty good. So I found it interesting last night where Elliot kind of showed the lineup without Nylander and what that looks like, and if you're comfortable and happy with that. That, I don't know, it looks way different without Nylander, doesn't it, to you guys? Like, if you're going in the playoffs, you're going, I don't know, I kind of like it. Kind of don't mind the look with Nylander there.
Well, it's like Jacques Martin used to say when he was the head coach of the Ottawa Senators. We need good depth. You got to have depth. Do the Leafs have enough depth?
That question, I do. I like their depth a lot. I think guys look really good. Obviously Jack Campbell, the way he's been able to play in net, which I think is so important because I look at all the other really good teams and, there's a good chunk of them that you're going, I don't know if that goaltending is going to be good enough or will be good enough to get you to where you need to go. So, having both guys, if Freddie comes back healthy and ready to go, I think is massive. But at the same time, you look at their positions all over, and they've got pretty good depth. They've got good depth.
Up front though, Colby, what kind of player should the Leafs go after? Like, that's been the question, right? Do you go after a high skilled guy, a Taylor Hall, or do you go after a guy like Palmieri who just got traded? Obviously he's not available anymore. Boone Jenner got injured last night. It doesn't sound good there. So he's off, the trade block right now. Who do you like for this group if they do go after someone?
Well, Well, I think, I mean, I like Palmieri too. Like, that's the one guy I was thinking the Leafs could be fairly heavy on. Sorry about that. That's
everything
my,
okay?
Buzzer going off. Yeah. That's my buzzer going off as I rush
All right.
my son off to school.
Well, we just want to make sure everything's right, okay and you're not, like, reliving a scene from The Sopranos or something.
Yeah. No, everything is totally fine.
Okay.
The sun is shining. Yeah. No, but I did like Palmieri. I thought Palmieri would be a great fit. Obviously, a lot of intangibles. Like, a lot of those guys I look at, you know, for teams to acquire, and I'm like, what can they give you? Like, what are they going to – where are they going to fit? What can they do? Who would be good? Who has those intangibles to add a little bit of extra? And Palmieri seemed to be a guy for me on teams that you're looking to just add that extra guy that was going to be really, really good. So, good for the Islanders, I guess, with them, him and Zajac. But, yeah, if they can add any extra kind of intangible guy, I think a defenseman, too, would be nice for them just for extra depth, right? Like, if you get an injury back there, I mean, what are we talking again for coming in at defenseman?
Sandin?
So,
yeah.
Sandin or, you know.
Hey, yeah, we're 2 degrees from Martin Marincin. That's as I like to say, Goldie.
We're right there with Marincin. I know, and that could be a concern, I think, for the Leafs and Leaf fans. So I could see some D depth they're going and searching in that department for sure. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I think that Islanders move also, like, really, especially in, you know, in this East Division too, with the Penguins and other teams, I wonder what that's going to make a lot of teams look at to have to do. And we'll see, I guess, in Canada, well, so what Winnipeg's going to look to do as well, because I think they want to add a defenseman. They're pretty deep up front, but if they add a defenseman, look out, they could be a pretty good powerhouse in the North Division. So Toronto's going to want to just kind of make sure that their depth is on point, I think.
So we were talking to Jeff Merrick about this yesterday and how, you know, well, they were 7-0-1, now 8-0-1 their last 9 games, and players are starting, you're starting to see a little bit more out of guys. Is that the product of you kind of hear trade rumblings in your name attached to guys and you could be out? And the reason I'm asking is, what was it like in Pittsburgh when you got moved to Atlanta? Did you kind of have an idea? And when you hear those rumors, what's that like in the room? Like, I was talking to Cam, we had Camilleri on also yesterday. I was never part of any trade rumors because no other teams wanted me. But I'm sure, you know, your career, you had teams calling about you if you were available. And obviously Atlanta picked you up from Pittsburgh. And, you know, and I'm just wondering what's that like for guys in the room? And do guys feel that right now? Are guys playing better?
Yeah, I heard that with Cammy, that a couple clips with Cammy from you guys yesterday. It was really good about his trade story with Montreal, which was super weird, right? Like, gets called from the game on as he's walking on the ice. It's just wild. but for myself, yeah, I knew that, like, everyone knew our team was getting better. You know, we were headed in the right direction. And when teams, I think, put themselves, I think it's always kind of exciting, right? And Ziggy, you probably had this also just with your experience. When you guys were in a good position, you were like, okay, like, we're going to go for it. Like, we're going to probably get somebody to help us, or we're going to get somebody, you know, to put us over the top. You're either kind of in a position where you're selling, you're in a position where you're kind of okay and you're not going to do anything, I feel like most teams, or you're in a position where you're a good team or you're in the right direction, you just need a little help, and you know, the organization's going to come and do something good for you guys so that when you touch the playoffs, you're flying. And I think Pittsburgh was just in that situation with me to add, you know, they wanted to add a Hossa, which who wouldn't want to add a Hossa? So I got thrown into that deal. But I think everyone kind of knows that, right? Like, I see it too. Like, games are, for the most part, I think, starting to tighten up. We've had a lot of games where I think who's going to win isn't necessarily winning. So I think, you know, I got to give the guys a lot of credit just because this year has been, you've had to never before be, you know, so able to adjust to anything that comes your way day to day, which I think would be really hard. But, you know, for the way things are starting to tighten up right now, I mean, we're talking one goal games right to the wire, and, you know, teams giving that you wouldn't expect to have a chance to win are now starting to even beat some teams. You know, and it's just a lot tighter hockey right now, and it's not the Wild West of ripping goals, unless you're the Rangers against the Penguins the other night. But for the most part, it is starting to tighten up, guys, and I think it's just because of that. I think it's, you know, coming down to the final grind, the final stretch. You know, there's a lot more on the line. You know, every point is so huge, even more so as it was all season long. And then also, yeah, trade deadline. Like, you've got, you know, a lot of big things happening here in the next little while, and you got to see where your team is at and what your team's going to do. And, you know, a good kick at it. This is a super unique year, right? Like, you just got to get out of your division and you're in the semifinals. So a super unique year for a lot of teams. It's been pretty exciting. I love like the 2-game stint. Don't you like that?
Yeah,
Scotty, you gotta that with the.
I love the 3-game,
you know,
the 3-game stints the too.
Three.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, the 3 have been awesome. I don't mind it. Like, I gotta think that, you know, going forward, this is going to be something that the NHL, you know, may look at a little bit for some road trips here or there. You stick around town and play a few games. Like, I think it's come around and they've pulled it off to make it work. You know, it's working.
Well, I know, and Ziggy wants to jump in on and follow up on that point, but you guys played in the early ish 2000s, or at least you may remember, you used to play your divisional opponents 8 times during a season. And some of those you'd go to one city and you'd play on a Friday or a Sunday or a Saturday or a Monday, right? You'd play back to back in the same town. I always thought those were, those were great, right? Because the second game, there's hate and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, especially now when, like, there's way more on the line, I don't know, I just sense it to being, a lot more important. But that's just me, like, the hockey fan. But I am liking it. And, Ziggy, I remember, man, well, that was crazy. We didn't even play every team every year. They came and played us, and then the second year we'd go to play them, you know, like that. So sometimes we didn't even end up going to, like, Colorado or some of these, you know, other cities. But I think this format is something that, you know, you can take a small piece of it from, you know, this year and, you know, maybe look to the future of what it could look like, because it is, especially down the stretch right now, it is kind of making it a little exciting when you get these little stands and stints, these 2-3 game stints.
I think if you throw fans into the arena, I think it would, change a lot, just like some energy, guys playing a little bit harder. I think there would be more, I think the games would spill into the next more, right? Like, if you had a bit of a scrum or you had a fight or a bad hit, I think the next game would get worse. You'd have, you know, you have fans in there, it's loud, you have the energy, but it's kind of missing that, right? And I feel at times some of the 3-game series, as exciting as it has been, you could almost see at times, and I'll speak more for the Leafs games, you'd have a little bit of a layoff. You're like, okay, I know I'm playing these guys 3 days. Like, we haven't seen a lot of big line brawls and fighting. The fact that guys are seeing the same guys night over night, we haven't really seen the rough side of the game because of it. I think that's one thing I'm surprised hasn't happened.
Yeah, like you underestimate, like, I guess we kind of don't at this point, what fans are to sports, right? Like, being in that stadium or in that arena and what that means. So, Ziggy, I think you're 100% right. Like, everything about my playing career, of the moments that, you know, were awesome, like, had to do because of the moment happened, but, like, the reaction in the you know, with the crowd or stepping on the ice with that energy. And you can't energy without having that. And you're right, in these 2-game sets, to have that extra boost, and having the guys, like, kind of overreact, if you will, or get carried away with their emotions to that feeling, is what kind of elevates everything. So you're right. Yeah. And hopefully, you know, with playoff hockey, especially down here, we're getting people back in into events and into rinks, with the playoff atmosphere down the stretch. It should be pretty interesting. Get a little better vibe going, right, with the hockey fan watching their team with some fans in the stands. That'd be awesome.
No problem. Yeah, and you, like, there have been fans in the stands at some arenas all year. Like, I think Florida's drawn as well this year as they do in most years. Right, for example? There's 2,500 people there. Great. The Panthers are actually good this year, though. That's the difference.
They are.
With Cole.
Yeah, they are, absolutely. I think I saw, did you guys see the Masters is getting going here, I think, today?
Haven't discussed it
and,
at all.
It looks like...
Not even aware. No, not even aware. No. Oh, yeah, we made our selections. We are a little lead-off Masters draft.
Well, let's go. Who's taking that down?
Well... I mean, Ziggy's got...
I am the reigning champ.
Ziggy's got Patrick Cantlay.
Oh, golf guy.
Cameron Smith, Webb Simpson, and Adam Scott. I've got the New World Order, Colby. I've gone with the heels, Patrick Reed and Bryson DeChambeau. I've also got DJ. Dustin Johnson made it to the end of the second round of our four-round draft. And I've got Tony Finau just because anybody who blows out their ankle, pops it back in, and then kicks some pretty good ass. He didn't win the Masters the year it happened. Obviously, he hasn't won the Masters yet, but goes out and generally kicks ass after dislocating his ankle is good with me.
Yeah, that was... Wasn't that savage? He, like, flicked it back in. That was absolutely insane.
He finished top 10.
He did. He had a great weekend.
Yeah, top 10. Can you believe
he
played with that?
After that?
Yeah,
I don't know. I was like, what the hell?
I'd be embarrassed.
A plastic foot?
You'd be more embarrassed about popping your ankle out than you would about coming back and finishing top 10 after popping it back in.
I would have left the course and not come back for 2 years.
How would you have left the course? You would have needed somebody to drive you off in a cart.
That was bad.
Do you think the whole rest of the round, he was, like, wheeling around, like, hole to hole, and, like, thinking in his head, like, what his ankle's feeling like at that moment? Because, like, how did he play the rest of the round when his ankle was dangling by a thread?
You have to come back and play after that. Imagine, like, rolling your ankle in the par 3 challenge, running backwards. Like, who cares? Like, who cares about the par 3 challenge? That's the best part.
Oh, yeah.
He had to come back and play.
Yeah. It's like when Gus Frerotte scored a touchdown and bashed his head against the wall and concussed himself in celebration.
Oh, my God. Just,
the craziest.
Oh, this ankle thing was just nuts.
Craziest.
I like those picks, though, Scotty. Did you see DeChambeau on the practice, you know, when he's just swinging? Like, I've never seen a swing. Like, that is like Mike Tyson clip of him boxing, like practicing boxing, he was torquing on that swing.
Ziggy's got way more insight into the golf game than I do. But, like, that is the most baseball bat, like, that is the most baseball-looking swing I've ever seen. It was borderline horizontal. And just the torque and the speed. Like, I don't know how long his back is going to hold up, but God bless him.
God bless his back. Dear Lord, he's just putting everything and then some into it. And I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, does he have a sniff where this thing's going? Like, how do you have a sniff where that ball's going when you swing like that? That is absolutely incredible. Scary. Scary, boy.
What's your golf game like these days?
Oh, I'm like, non-existent at all. Ziggy, I got 4 kids. Like, this thing is just not happening. And if I do get out, maybe snap hook, maybe massive slice. Kind of struggle fest with the irons. Approach, rescue game, probably my best part of my game is when I'm having to, like, battle out of somewhere, hit, like, a decent shot, and then putting, guaranteed 3 putts all over the place. Like, if I break 90, unreal. If I can get, like, in, like, above 90 somewhere in the mid-90s, low 90s, unreal. Unreal, buddy.
I'm just waiting for my invite to... it's pretty good. I'm just waiting for my invite to Oakmont outside of Pittsburgh.
I was about to say, Colby, he doesn't care about your golf game. He just wants, this was all headed toward, when can I come and crash in the guest bedroom?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and play around at Oakmont. You're going to say, I don't have a guest bedroom. I got 4 kids. What do you think? I got an 8-bedroom house? But there you go.
You know? All right.
Then you sleep on the couch. We'll get you on Oakmont, buddy.
Okay. All right.
Colby, it's always good to hear your voice, and we'll bug you again very soon.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah, great chatting with you guys. Good morning, and have a great rest of the week into the weekend.
You bet. Colby Armstrong, Sportsnet NHL analyst, played for the Leafs, played for the Habs. I mean, it was a Leaf a decade ago, man. Time flies. Time flies.
Crazy.
Something to chew on for great Canadian meat. Hugh Winter Burrell jumps into studio. I don't know what our master's report is going to look like here because the earliest tea times have just gotten started.
It's going to be short. How about that? It's going to be short. They have just teed off. There was a ceremonial tee off, of course, with Lee Elder, Jack Nicklaus, and Gary Player. And then the golfers went out. The first group was a twosome. Hudson Swafford. There's a name for you. Hudson Swafford. And Michael Thompson went out. Swafford parred the first hole. Thompson bogeyed it. So, you know, he's last right now. Sandy Lyle and Matt Jones, by the way, just parred hole number one. Tee-all-up is the name of that hole, by the way.
How many guys that didn't qualify or couldn't play in the tournament this week are looking at that first tee-off time and saying, how do you not add another player to that first time? I know they have the tradition and how many guys they let in, and it's certain AMs, you know, amateur winners in the U.S., the British, and you have the Georgia AM that comes out and plays, but do you not just want to add another player to that first group when you see the two? Like, when I saw the two names this morning when I woke up, I thought they filled it with three players every time slot.
Yeah, well, I guess it's confused. An odd number of players in the field, so there has to be a twosome there somewhere. But you're right. Why not just add one more to the field? This is a pretty tight field. Yeah. It's a pretty compact field, as the kids say. I don't know if the kids say that, but yeah. So that's why. Well, why not add one more guy?
Yeah. And DeChambeau is, I'm looking forward to watching him play. The reason is how much he struggled in November.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I'm saying that is,
he goes off at 1:36 this afternoon, by the way. 1:36.
And I'll bring this up at every Masters tournament. It's the only golf course on the PGA all year where distance matters. It's just funny how the longest hitter of all time struggled so bad there when driving distance actually does matter and accuracy isn't as important. I know they don't grow the rough out, but man, the places that DeChambeau put the ball in November, I'm not picking him in any of my pools for this, you know, this weekend. Who knows if that thing, you know, we saw the clips of him and VG on the range. I don't know if that ball could end up in a different area code.
Yeah, he,
on some tee box.
You know what? He's a bit of a freak show that way. Like he's all about hitting it hard. But I mean, we've watched this tournament for years and years and years. This comes down to putting. And I think what hurts Bryson DeChambeau is you're not allowed to have a green book with you. Like you have to read the green with your eye. There are no kind of maps of the green where Bryson DeChambeau is such a technical player. He's always in that book, marking off distances and slope and angle and all that kind of stuff. You're not allowed to do that at Augusta. You've got to just see it with your eye. That might affect him.
Bryson's always checking the book. What was that tournament a couple of months ago when he had to hole out from about 160 yards just to get it to a playoff? He obviously didn't.
He's
scrolling ten seconds later.
Imagine if one of the guys in your foursome on a Saturday or Sunday was like that. How annoying would that be?
Separate whether he cares, do you think he knows he's that guy and revels in it? Or do you think he just is how he is and he's oblivious to the fact that he pisses people off.
I think until he went through the body change, I don't think he realized he was that guy. But now that he's gone through the change and there's all of this attention on him, I think he not only does he understand it and accept it, but he, like you said, he revels in it. I think he likes being that guy.
I think he's good for the sport.
Absolutely,
by the way,
he's good for the sport. We're talking about Bryson DeChambeau.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, like, because There have been guys since Tiger who have been projected, who had potential. Like Rory's one of them.
Yeah.
There's nothing about Rory. We can have the debate as to whether Rory has lived up to the hype.
No.
But there's nothing to dislike about Rory McIlroy.
Wonderful.
Either, yeah. Right? So Bryson
hasn't won in about 3.5-4 years, but yeah.
Bryson is this combination of that guy, both physically and the way he speaks. And how hard he hits the ball and how far he hits the ball. And he's changing the game, and there's always discomfort with change.
But we're not suggesting that Bryson is the next one.
I don't think there ever will be another Tiger Woods, but there have to be people that you want to watch, either because you're rooting for the controversial figure or you want to see the controversial figure get... When the Toronto Maple Leafs or the Montreal Canadiens or whoever goes out of the playoffs and you're left with the New York Islanders and pick a team that's relatively inconsequential.
The Carolina Hurricanes. Yeah,
the Islanders and Hurricanes play in a crucial playoff series. You're like, okay,
yeah,
great. Meh. I don't have a rooting interest for and I don't have a rooting interest against. Bryson DeChambeau is a guy. He's not the needle the way that Tiger was. But he's somebody you are either rooting for or against, and I think that that's important, especially in individual sports.
There are patrons this year at Augusta National, and you watch the size of the crowd that follows that group around, right, Zig? It's going to be huge watching this guy. There's the freak factor, right? We want to see this guy smash it with a swing speed of 140 plus miles an hour. Now, most pros swing at around 118. He's swinging at about 100, over 140 miles an hour. It's crazy.
Just remember Dustin Johnson last year in November, 20 under. Every year that the winner finishes with a low score, whether it was Woods, DJ, it's happened, a handful of times. That next year, they tighten the screws on the course. They make the fairways harder, drier. They dry out the greens. The course becomes really difficult. I know they grew the rough out a little bit in November. That was just because they haven't played the tournament in that month before. But they're back to the normal schedule. Watch how much tougher it is. I will say right now that the winner won't finish in under double digits. You won't see any minus 10s. It'll be minus 9 or, somewhere in there. Minus 8, minus 9 will win it. Nothing over minus 10.
We've tweeted it out at Scotty Mac Thinks, at Mike Zigamanis, at Hugh W. Burl, and at Adam_Stanley. We've each taken a foursome, and we'll see how that foursome does over the course of the weekend and brag about it on Monday. If we win, you can check it out on Twitter. The station account is @Fan590. It's one of our favorite segments of the week, Stewie and Bourne. Hockey Central at 8:30. We celebrate Jack Campbell's record. And that Maple Leafs team suddenly looks a lot thinner without William Nylander, doesn't it? Don't let one game result fool you. Kyle Dubas has some work to do between now and Monday. We'll talk to the boys next. Sure, there's a reason for this, Ziggy.
This is the song that Stewie would dance to at Palazzo's All Ages nightclub back in the day.
I saw you at Camilleri there one day. I'm not gonna lie. I honestly remember seeing you. You were in the dance room. I usually was in the hip hop room on the third floor. But yes, I was a regular at Palazzo All Ages. Yes.
What is this? Tell me about it.
Stewie, what are you talking about? What?
Palazzo used to be like a dance club. It was an all age. Used to have all these all ages events. So it was a dance club where people from 15 to 18 would go on the weekends. The parents would just drop them off in Woodbridge and go on about their day. And let's just say some debauchery would be going on these dance clubs and the dance floors. So I'm not ashamed to admit that I used to have glow sticks. I used to be on the dance floor, yeah.
All right.
This is one of the songs.
You just hoard drink tickets. Hey, can I have a Coca-Cola? All right. It's Stewie and Bourne. It's Hockey Central at 8:30, or as Ziggy and I are calling them this morning, the two Hudson Swaffords of Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I know Stewie doesn't know that name, and I barely know who it is. I think he's the first guy to tee off today.
Yeah, he's golfing. He's golfing right now at Augusta National. You know what we're not doing, and Hudson Swafford is? Golfing at Augusta National right now. And that puts him slightly ahead of us, but only slightly. All right, what's the explanation, Stewie? There's always a reason for the song request. Is there something there, or are you just... You were feeling
well,
in a
Well, Jack
in a
Campbell,
mood this morning.
The song was, for those that don't know, that was Runaway by The Real McCoy. And Jack Campbell is starting to run away with the number one goaltending position. And the trade deadline is coming on Monday, and there's going to be a lot of players trying to run away from Buffalo.
I see. Okay. So, they always say about a joke if it requires an explanation. That's okay. Jack Campbell is 10-0, which is the best start by a Leafs goaltender in a season in franchise history. Some of the games have been spaced out. We know that. What is the length of Jack Campbell's leash relative to the length of Frederik Andersen's leash when he gets healthy and is able to return based on the way that Campbell is playing, guys? Bourne, start with you.
I think they're going to try to go to a split, Scotty. Like, I think they're just going to say, here are games, Jack Campbell. Here are games, Freddie Andersen. You guys decide who we're going to play. I feel like they're in a situation now where both guys have enough reasons behind them, enough on the pro side to say that here's our guy. So I think they're just going to get out of the way instead of saying, yes, Jack Campbell has now won the starting job and, going from there. I just think they're going to hand it to those two guys and say, you play well, you get to play again. It's going to be that simple for you guys.
Yeah, there's still another 16 games to go, so I think they're going to want to try to get Freddie Andersen some games just to see, how he's feeling going into the playoffs. But at the end of the day, this team is talking about making a serious run. You have to go with the hot goalie, and if Jack Campbell continues to play 940 hockey, you got to ride him. And we saw what the St. Louis Blues did last year with Jordan Binnington coming in, 2 years ago. So if Jack Campbell continues playing at this, crazy pace, you have to ride him till the wheels fall off.
What were your thoughts with this Leafs team without William Nylander? Me and Scotty were discussing how as soon as one of the big four are out, you kind of say, well, where's the scoring going to come from? Justin, was it a big deal for you yesterday watching that game? Did you have kind of the same thoughts on, wow, this is like this forward group's a little bit thin without Willie in there?
Yeah, no, it's, if it were for any sustained period of time, it would start to feel a lot thinner. And I think part of that is you don't feel like John Tavares is the guy who you used to be able to tape two rec leaguers to them and they would have career seasons. Like, that was a thing, right? In mm-hmm. Long Island, it didn't matter who you put with them. All of a sudden, it was like, P.A. Peronto is an all-star. it literally did not matter. Matt Molson had his breakout.
Molson made a great living, right?
Yeah. Josh Bailey. Like, he made wingers. You don't feel like he's that guy now. Like, I don't think Ilya Mikheyev on that wing is suddenly going to command $5 million per season after scoring a ton of goals. So, yes, it starts to feel thin quickly, and that's... one of the things with this Leafs team, it's been pretty healthy in terms of the top guys. Their D-core has been healthy. It doesn't happen like that way or like that in playoffs. So you may feel comfortable with this team, but they got to shore up some depth at a couple of these positions for sure.
Yeah, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, man, if they lose another guy, they're in trouble here. And I was always talking about how they had the depth and, one of the best depth forward groups in the National Hockey League, but they lost Boyd, they lost Vesey. Barabanov has been, sitting in the press box eating popcorn for the last couple of weeks, probably the last month as well. So that's another thing that I think they have to add at this deadline too, is some depth forwards, because you lose one guy to COVID or to injury, that can really kill your top six especially. But great game by Galchenyuk as well. He seems like he's getting a lot more confident with the puck. He's making plays at the blue line, cutting into the middle, head down, ready to make plays. So great game by Galchenyuk as well.
Well, so what do you believe about him and his role on this team now? And has it changed since he got brought up from the Marlies? And do you believe he can be trusted to play some kind of sufficient role through whatever playoff run they're going to have?
You know, I think he is going to look like this, and I trust him to play well as long as he's uncomfortable. You know, as long as he feels like his spot is tenuous and that he's hanging on to, you know, every minute he can get and fighting for his NHL career, like the effort he's given has been wonderful. And I think that's all part of it, is that there's real pressure on him to succeed. It would be a little, I don't know, I've seen players that suddenly that they get comfortable. Maybe there's an injury or two and Galchenyuk becomes a permanent fixture in the top six and he doesn't feel like he has to work for it as much. Maybe that changes things. I don't know. Because I'm not super comfortable just in general with him. I wouldn't want to sign him to a multi-year deal, but I sure like him in the current position he's in. To Stewie's point, I just was really impressed with him hanging on to the puck. Like a lot of guys who feel pressure or aren't feeling confident, just get it in deep and get after it and look like they're skating hard. He was really confident with the puck, hanging on to it, looking to make plays. He's got a ton of talent.
Yeah, I think he's the next member of the 700 Club, a guy that they signed for $700,000, and he outperforms his cap hit. So I think he's earned another year. I know it's early, but just seeing what, you know, his confidence, that going down to the minors and finding his game for that short period of time seems to work wonders. So I think now when he's got a little bit of a fire underneath him and something to prove, he shows, you know, like he's playing like players like he did in past seasons. So everything is judged based on the playoffs, but I'm liking what I'm seeing so far by Galchenyuk.
Auston Matthews is known for a shot, best goal scorer in the league, but on the Hyman goal last night, I don't know if you guys noticed this, or maybe I'm wrong. Did you not
try to score, Ziggy? We're not going there, Ziggy. He tried to score.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you guys talked about this.
Next question. Let's go. Here we go, Ziggy. You wrote this down, too. You thought about it. Finish. Sorry, Ziggy. Sorry, finish.
Justin's going to back me up. Hold on. I already know this. I know Justin's got my back. Do you not think, like, I haven't seen him make a play like that. I thought it was awesome because I don't think he had a chance to score in that play, and it was, like, a little backhand for Hyman. Not just the play, but his expression when Hyman put it in, it was like, you know, the look guys give you when they score. Usually they do like the Gretzky lap where it's like a six setup and then they go for like a big skate. Or am I wrong? Justin, back me up or I'm wrong. I don't know.
I'm with Stewie. You know what? I think he saw Hyman on the back door and was like, here comes Tuck City for old 34. And it worked out for him. It was a heck of a rush.
Stewie, yeah, it was a great rush.
Stewie,
yeah.
And Bourne with us on Leadoff Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Have you guys given any thought, and if you have, please let us know, because Ziggy and I bandied this about yesterday and really came to no conclusion that satisfied us. But what is the best way to handle the standings in the North Division now if the Vancouver Canucks are way short on games? Now, we know, as we sit here right now, that the NHL would like the Canucks to be playing games by not this weekend, but next weekend in a perfect world. They've had a positive test, though, within the last 36 hours or so. Jake Virtanen was added to the list. So we have no idea if that's a best-case scenario, if it can actually happen or what have you. How do we go about this? Because my argument is, if, let's say, the Montreal Canadiens end up with 52 of 56 games played and Vancouver plays 42, 10 fewer, and if Vancouver were to go 9-1, they'd overtake Montreal if they made up those games. Well, the points percentage is going to favor Vancouver, but you can't possibly put Vancouver in the playoffs over Montreal in that scenario. Like, I have no solution here. You two are really smart. Fix it for me, please. I'm begging you.
Stu, you want to go?
Yeah, I think they find a way to get Vancouver to at least 50 games. So maybe they push the season back, the playoffs back another week. And there's been discussions about that as well, too. But, you know, with the Vancouver Canucks, I think hockey's sort of secondary right now with what's going on, where 25 players have caught the virus. It's definitely hockey's at the bottom of the list right now, too. But from a business standpoint, that's a good point. So maybe they play a best of three series, play-in series, because when they had these points percentage, you know, standings, I think it was based on teams missing 3, 4, maybe 5 games, not 15 games. So it'll be interesting to see what they do.
Yeah, I think one of the things they have working in their favor is that looking at their remaining schedule, right now it's like they would have games against the Flames, the Senators. You know, the only team that would really get hurt is the Leafs. In terms of, you know, Vancouver's a non-playoff team. The Canucks are supposed to play them three times, which might be free wins for Toronto. But the league may end up looking at this and just saying, they're not making the playoffs. Like, Toronto's going to be in first. They're not making the playoffs. The Senators and Flames don't need those points. Like, it may just have to come down to you know, the standings as they are with points percentage, you know, with the Canucks being on the outside. I don't know. I just don't see a way that you're right, Scotty, you know, that the Canucks can find their way back into a playoff spot. You could put them in with only 40 games. It may just have to be a practical thing where you just cut them off and just say it's not like, going to matter anyway.
Guys, like, Montreal's lost more games than they've won, but nine of those losses, they've gotten the bonus point, right? Vancouver, Calgary, and Ottawa have more regulation time losses than victories. You cannot be straight up under 500 WL in those two columns in this day and age of the NHL and make the playoffs. It's just, I don't think it's happened since they started with the bonus point, followed by the shootout wins versus losses. Like, there's 19 columns. I can't keep up with it. But straight up W's and L's, if you got more L's than W's, you're not making the playoffs. I don't think it ever happens.
No, I think that's a pretty reasonable point of contention here. It may come down to, does Edmonton get upset because they had games against the Canucks and they're a softer opponent, you know, for their point percentage? I guess it comes down to a little bit of reasonableness from, like, the Oilers, Jets, and Canadians, depending on what the point percentages shake out and who didn't get their games against the softer team.
When you see the Palmieri-Sajak trade for a first rounder, another conditional pick, some prospects, is this going to raise the price of, you know, any, you know, deadline deals, or is this going to go the other way? What were your thoughts on the deal, and where do you see the trade market going?
Well, I still think it's a buyer's. Go ahead, Justin. Go.
I just think it's really hard to get a first rounder. Like, you had a guy who's scored at a prolific rate for a long time in Palmieri, and Travis Zajac, who's a serviceable player at this point, and the Devils had to eat half of their contracts to get that first. So I think it's not easy to get a first rounder, which makes you think, you know, can Taylor Hall alone get one for Buffalo? Probably. After that, I think it's just going to be really hard for a team to acquire a first rounder in a trade this year.
Yeah, and I think, but you got to think of from the other side, probably this is the year to really get rid of the first rounder, because a lot of teams haven't been playing, or hasn't been a full season, especially in the Ontario Hockey League, where they've been yet to play. So there's some guys that have been begged to go in the first round that their development has been hampered, you know, by a full year of missing hockey. So I think it's going to be tough, but you're looking at the trade bait board right now, and Toronto's prospects is number 8. So I think if that's the case, it's going to be really, really tough to get some of these top assets, as people are saying.
Stewie, our boss, Ryan Favreau, has found a photo of the old Palazzo, and he has tweeted it out. I'm seeing like 5 or 6 pillars out front. Was this a converted funeral home, or like
That was the best place, though, because those lights, those bright lights, would shine down so you can get a good look at the people before you get in there, because you don't want to end up on the dance floor, right?
You can judge. You can harshly judge.
There could be some shady characters in there. Stay away from this guy. He's got missing
brass
an eye.
Knuckles of
it. Yeah. Some people look far better in the dark with the lights dim than they do with the lights on. We know what you were saying.
The all ages dance hall.
Just a big old grade 8 dance.
I met
Palazzo.
My wife when I was 12, so I'll say that. I met my wife when I was 12, so.
Well, there you go. There you go.
Did you guys get married in the Palazzo to honor your...
The reception was held at the Palazzo.
It's not that bad. I don't think it'd be bad for a reception. I mean, come on. It's not that bad.
You guys got to get Camilleri in there and ask him about Palazzo. He used to be there all the time.
Yes, next time, Camilleri
is remember,
on.
Remember DiBiase? DiBiase was in there, too. Those boys. Those,
Joe,
the Woodbridge
Joe
crew
DiBiase,
used to run that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. All those boys are there.
Boys, it's always a blast. More Palazzo talk next week, and we'll have a lot to break down because we'll be well past the trade deadline. Look forward to it. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Go Leafs, go.
Stewie and Bourne, Hockey Central at 8:30. Good way to wrap the show. Elliot Friedman tomorrow morning. We'll check in on the Masters, obviously, ahead of round 2. We're back at 6 o'clock on your Friday. Should be a gorgeous day. Good shows next. Enjoy the Blue Jays home opener. We lived up to the bargain.